Steve, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder, and it's Wednesday. We're thrilled that you're here. I've asked Mark Harmon to stick around for a little bit, Wendy, for several reasons. Reason number one, we love Mark Harmon. Why
Absolutely.
Wouldn't we want him to stick around?
That's so nice of you, Bill,
and you.
Wendy.
We love you.
I love you guys back. Love it. Great to be here. Hi.
Also, there have been a couple of stories in the sports world that we thought that you should weigh in on. Number one, the Bears are saying that they're actively trying to trade quarterback, and I use that term loosely, Jay Cutler. What could they possibly get for Jay Cutler right now?
I would say that they would be hoping for a fourth-round pick and probably will be settling for a fifth, sixth, seventh-round pick, something like that, if they can get that. My guess would be that Jay Cutler will end up being cut and picking his next destination, but they are trying to squeeze something out of the Jay Cutler lemon. Can I say that? Does that make sense?
He put the cut in Cutler.
He did.
Yeah. I think it's pretty clear, more than anything else, that it's over with the Bears and Cutler.
You really, 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 truly believe that?
I really, 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 truly believe that, yes.
Looking back now, let's say what you say is true and his days as a Bear are over.
Mm-hmm.
What went wrong there? Because he had nothing but ability and talent, and why wasn't it used properly?
Well, uncoachable.
Is that it? I bet that has something to do with it.
That's part of it. I think that the 1 year that he was great or very, very good was when he had Adam Gase. And then Gase left and went to Miami, and the Dolphins had an unbelievable year this year with him as the head coach. So you look at the Bears with John Fox, and they could have hired Adam Gase. I think if they could go back in time and do that again, they would have either A, hired Gase originally, or promoted him and gotten rid of Fox after 1 year. They would have had to eat some money there. But
so priority number one for the Bears, a time machine.
Right.
And wasn't everybody excited about John
Fox
coming? What happened?
I think what happened is they hired an older guy who
just wanted to take a nap.
I mean, basically,
afternoon, and I need a nap.
I think John Fox coming into a ready-made situation would have been okay. John Fox coming into the rebuilding Bears, not okay. Mm-hmm. John Fox, when John Elway forces you out the door, mm-hmm. and then the Broncos go and win a Super Bowl without you, I mean, what does that tell you about the guy? I mean, let's be real here. So, for whatever reason, John Fox is coming back for another season. I don't know if you guys know this. I do this post-game show on Sundays with Hampton and B and Kaz.
Yeah.
They fought the entire season for John Fox to not be here, Dan Hampton especially. I thought he had the power to actually make that cut / firing.
Yeah.
Apparently he did not. But I would be shocked if Fox survives after next season. You know what? And to answer your question, Wendy, as I just think about it more with Jay, they needed to make the thing not about Jay. They needed to have a great offensive line. They needed to have a great running back. They needed have everything set up for him, and then it would have been okay. But they didn't have that, and they asked for him to carry him at least to a significant point, and he's just not that.
Any idea if we're going to get Jimmy Garoppolo?
I have no idea. I'd be surprised. But listen, they got the number 3 pick in the draft. That's a huge trading chip. Mm-hmm. If they want to use it, it's a risky play. And they need a lot of help at other positions all over the place. Defensive line, secondary, linebacker. They need another wide receiver. You could even boost the offensive line. But you got to have a quarterback to win. So if they like Garoppolo and that's the cost, I think you make that trade if you really like Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't know what they think of Jimmy Garoppolo.
Is it New England that's pressing the Bears to make that trade, or would it be the Bears pressing New England to make that trade?
That's interesting. Because if I'm New England, right, you've got Tom Brady, who's got maybe another 1 or 2 years left to go for...
Or possibly more. Oh. He hasn't looked lately like he's fading anytime soon.
Sure, but you're going to take, I would think, one of your prime assets and try to make your team that much better
mm-hmm.
so you can squeeze out Super Bowl VI, Super Bowl VII.
Mm-hmm.
So I think New England has a lot of incentive to make a trade, but the Bears have huge incentive too.
Yeah.
I mean, they need a quarterback.
All right, here's what I've said on the show a couple times, but I'd love to hear your theory on this. I don't think it's the quarterback, and I don't think it's the coaching, and I don't think it's management. I think it's the ownership of the Bears. I think that's where the problem stems, don't you, kind
of? Of course, of course. Always the top.
Well,
Blackhawks didn't transform until they changed at the top. The Cubs didn't transform until they changed at the top. The Bears need a change at the top.
They never will.
Well, I mean, the theory is with Virginia, when she eventually passes away, which nobody lives forever, not rooting for that, obviously. She's a great woman and has a ton of respect for being a great person, all that. But when that happens, there is a lot of questions as to what's going to happen with the Bears.
What do you think about a hostile takeover? If we, the Chicagoans, go into Soldier Field and just say to the McCaskey family, out. You guys are out. We're taking over.
It's a very aggressive play.
Yes, it and,
go ahead and spearhead it,
yes,
Bill.
Yes, it is. I want in.
But
I'll do it.
There are a lot of people.
I have a battering ram.
Generally, the entire city and suburbs and surrounding states, lots of Bears fans everywhere, who would join you?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I think the McCaskey's approval rating is about zero.
Right. Why doesn't somebody coach them to make good decisions?
That's a good
and
idea.
Then they can remain
Could they do that?
Owners?
You would think that it just, like, If Wendy Snyder was gifted the Chicago Bears today, wouldn't you think that the first thing you would do is find out who are some really intelligent people out there?
Football minds.
Let's talk to them.
Yeah.
And let's work on building contacts and building relation and figure out who I should hire. I don't think it's rocket science. I really don't.
Right.
But for whatever reason, it has been for the Bears. I mean, every time they have to make a big hire, we got to bring in a consultant. How do you need a consultant? This is your business. This is what you do.
That's true.
You've been doing it forever.
Although radio people bring in consultants all the time.
Yeah, they do.
Well, okay, if you're bringing in a consultant for radio because you don't want to listen to 7,000 demo tapes and find out who's out there,
that's
a little bit lazy, but I kind of get it. In football, you know, there's only a limited amount of people that you need to talk to.
That's true.
One more question about this, and then we have a personal question
sure.
we need to ask you after the break. Is this fixable? And if this is fixable, give us a timeline on how soon we can
within
expect.
20 years.
Is it within
the Bears?
20?
Oh, I sure it's fixable.
Is it?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say it's
in our lifetime.
Probably.
I was looking for something more optimistic.
I mean, I never thought that the Cubs would ever get over the top.
That's true.
And they did.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was, again, a huge transformation there. You had a team being sold. You had a Theo Epstein coming in.
Uh-huh.
Nothing like that's happening with the Bears.
I know. That's why it's dangerous. All right. More with our friend Mark Harmon. If you want to jump in, we're 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, Mark Harmon in the studio. And we're talking Bears and will we ever see a win in our lifetime? Really bottom line.
Yeah.
You guys are really, I think the passion that you bring to the Bears should be something the Bears should want for themselves. I mean, look at what's the date today? February or whatever?
Yeah.
And you guys are feeling it.
Yeah.
I think that's something that they should feel at Hallis Hall. Let's make a call.
Here's what it comes down to. Wendy and I have discussed this. During the playoffs and into the Super Bowl, it was genuinely fun to sit and watch real football teams play real football, and we both kind of miss that. Because we've not been offered that option on Sunday.
I'm going to have to start going to church again. There's nothing else to do on Sundays.
Well, that's good, though.
It is good.
You know, we'll get closer to the old almighty, little spirituality going on.
What's wrong with that?
I watch the games every week. So I still find them to be entertaining from a pure entertainment, what's going to happen next situation. But from an actual winning, hoping that something super positives going on, that hasn't been going on for a long time.
It's entertaining for the other teams.
Yeah,
you know,
there's a massive amusement going on. There's no doubt.
That's when Cutler will really be a good quarterback for us, when he's on another team and he's throwing interceptions to our guys. That's when the Cutler that we all want will materialize.
Well, we'll see where he ends up. Maybe he'll be playing up against the Bears next season. That would be incredibly entertaining.
What sort of reaction as they introduce Jay Cutler in Soldier Field? What sort of reaction does he get from the fans?
I think that's mixed.
Yeah.
You see a decent amount of Cutler jerseys out there.
Yeah, because they're on sale.
Most likely, yes. But I mean,
you've made me so bitter, Bill.
I know.
When he came here, it was celebrated. People were so excited that finally the Bears had a quarterback. And I think some people still look at it like it's not Jay's fault. It's everything around him. He's had a gazillion offensive coordinators. He hasn't had great wide receivers, at least not for the majority of his tenure here. The offensive line's been shoddy. There's still people that would point the finger at a lot of other people other than Cutler.
Yeah, and I do have to admit there is something to that. He a lot of the blame goes his way, but not all of the blame.
Sure,
right.
But the quarterback is the quarterback, and you're going to get all the praise when you win, and you're going to get a ton of it when you lose.
That's how it is. It's the most important, I think, position in all of professional sports, don't you?
It's a fair argument. I guess, a goalie in hockey could carry you to a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
So there's that. But
which teams have won the Super Bowl with weak quarterbacks?
It's very true.
I don't think you can.
It doesn't happen.
Yeah. All right. Now, on the personal side, the last time Wendy and I had you on the show, because they were bringing back the show The Love Connection, and we thought to ourselves, who better to be a contestant than our friend Mark Harmon on the newly vamped Love Connection? Are things going okay in the dating world for you?
Well, I thought you guys might be amused. Like last night, I had a first date.
Whoa.
And so I didn't realize that when I had originally scheduled this date that I was going to be filling in for Dave Bennett on the Steve Cochran show.
Right.
I also didn't necessarily look at the schedule and realize that Hawks in Minnesota and Northwestern in Illinois.
Yeah.
So we had this quick little drink set up, and I get to the establishment and there's no TVs in there. And she was a little bit late, so I had to send her a text that, do you like sports? And
then
I didn't get a response. So then I called and I said, hey, there's like 8 minutes left in the Wildcats game. Do you think we could just go down the block a little bit here and check out Northwestern and Illinois? And, you know, and by Wendy's looking at me.
I'm thinking, you know, that's what you do for a living. So,
right, which is how I played it. I'm like, look, I would probably want to do this if I didn't do this for a living, but I am going to be on the morning and I got to know what's going on.
Right.
So this is what we got to do. I hope you're down with that. And she was totally fine with it. But so it worked out.
Oh, you're very lucky.
But I was aggressive in asking for what I wanted and what I needed.
But get that out in the open right away.
Right.
You know?
You support this. I feel so much better than
I really do.
Yeah,
but
okay,
Mark,
good.
If you're her, don't you say to yourself, oh, this sets an odd precedent. If our relationship blossoms, will there always be a game that he needs to see rather than talk to me?
And that was discussed. And I said, absolutely, this is what I do. And, you know, it's going to be something that's not going to go away.
Yeah.
I need to be around sports all the time. If I was no longer doing radio, there'd be some stuff that I wouldn't watch. But even if I,
the good thing about sports though is it's only 12 months out of the year. The
rest
of the time.
Okay, but listen, now this isn't fair. Conversely, what if she's an attorney and she has a big case the next morning that she thought would be over with? She would have to say, you know what? I'm busy tonight. I got to look over my briefs. I'll look at your briefs later.
Right. Totally cool. Absolutely.
So, I mean, you've got to understand. I think it was great you were straight up and forward with her.
Yeah. So otherwise, I would sit in there. I wouldn't have paid attention.
Right.
Would have been looking at my phone. What's the score? All this. Then I would have had tons of ontological guilt going on. I'm not going to come. It would have been a disaster.
That's the worst of all guilt.
That's a bad guilt.
The ontological
Big
guilt.
Question, though. Mm-hmm. Will there be date number two?
I think there's going to be date two.
Oh!
Will you have to look at the schedules of the Blackhawks, Northwestern, the Bulls?
Yeah, I mean, now we got spring training
Baseball's
going on.
Coming up.
Take her to a Hawks game. That'd be a great date number two, because then she's like, I can reap the benefits of this sports
dude. That is a
good
idea.
Right, absolutely. I was thinking maybe she just would want to go to Indiana and see the Cats in Bloomington on Saturday, second date, four-hour drive, no biggie.
That's an excellent
idea.
Biggie.
Yeah, it's a lot
luck
of time.
With that. I hope there's a date three.
Thank
Good
you,
luck,
Mark.
The Cats in Bloomington.
Yep. It's
hot.
Big.
Yeah.
That's Mark Harmon, everybody. We'll take a quick break. Steve with the news. A lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And Bill and Steve, I want to tell you that I know you went through this last year with kids going off to college.
Correct.
And I don't mean to make it sound like a guy-girl thing, but it's going to.
Yeah.
I think your wives probably worked harder at getting everything ready and getting college apps done.
Absolutely true.
What?
Steve takes you to task for this.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Okay, so of course, I know you guys forget this, but I'm a girl.
Oh, right.
So I had
two shockers in a row there.
So I've been very stressed to get Michael filling out his Common App and getting everything done. We have Lisa Heffernan on the line, New York Times bestselling author, mom, wife, friend, and one of the co-founders of one of my favorite websites, Grown and Flown. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, Wendy. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, I was very stressed out and in turn maybe nagged at my high school senior, Michael, quite a bit to get his applications filled out. Good news is he finally did, got accepted to the first college of his choice. So that's all good
wonderful
news. But is it too late to be applying for colleges now? They put all these deadlines on you.
There are some colleges that will still accept applications. And I believe that Money Magazine, which is part of Time Inc., makes a list of those. So if any parent is out there and thinking, oh, my God, we've missed this, what can I do? I believe if you go to Money Magazine and look up colleges that are still accepting applications, I think they have some lists. But for most schools, it's done. It's, you know, the applications needed to be in already, and now kids are just waiting for their acceptances.
Lisa, I don't remember a generation ago schools having their set list. I thought you could, again, a generation ago, I thought you could get in much later in the year than is now the case. Why did this change so dramatically?
You know, there's just part of it was the very large birth cohorts. There are many, many more kids who were born in the 90s, which are the kids that we're working through right now. We're just going to start on the 2000s. So there are very large classes of kids. There's the Common App, which, Wendy, you probably saw this, allows your kid to easily apply to many more schools than we ever would have if we'd had to put those things through a typewriter and type each application. And in addition to that, more kids are going to college. So it's just a much more kids from other countries are coming into the United States going to college. More American kids are applying to college. College has become accessible in many ways for more families, which is just a wonderful thing.
If you go to Grown and Flown, you can go to their website and grownandflown.com. And I watched your financial aid Facebook Live that you had and learned a lot of information. One college that accepted my son is offering more of a scholarship, and you can kind of use that at your against your first choice. So all
Absolutely.
These, it's great information on Grown and Flown. And if you have...
Okay, Wendy.
Absolutely.
One of the things you were talking about there that I'd love parents to know is that those offers that parents get, those are not set in stone. And that's what we were talking about with one of the experts at Money Magazine. We were in, down on Wall Street speaking with them. If you get an offer and you get a better offer from another school, go back to the other school if your kid genuinely wants to go there. I mean, don't toy with them. But if your child didn't get as good an offer from their top choice, go with that offer and say, we can't afford this. This is what they got. Can you match it? Or, as we talked about on the broadcast, if anything has changed in your family, if anything about your family's financial situation has changed, somebody's lost a job, changed a job, had to go to part-time, you know, there's been a death in the family or an illness or anything has changed. Because, you know, you fill those things out in the fall, and it's 6-9 months later, and many people's financial situations have altered in some way that's very relevant to this to the college. So let them know that.
Why does a college care, though? I mean, really. I mean, that's terrible news. You know, good luck. Go with the better offer. What benefits them to have them come down in or come up in scholarship money?
Once they've accepted you, they want you. Okay? So, they're not that worried about you before they accept you. But once they accepted you, they really want you to come. In part, they want you to come because one of the things that they're ranked on is their yield, and the yield means the number of kids who accept their offer versus the number of kids they offer places to. So they want everybody, or as many as they can, who they offer places to accept their offers. But also, their money is shifting. So in other words, they've made certain financial aid offers, but some of those kids aren't going to come to the school. So now they have more money than they might have had. It's the whole thing is a very dynamic process. You know, they're accepting kids. Kids are accepting other schools. It's all shifting sands. So they may have offered you, for argument, let's say $10,000. But four other kids they made full scholarship offers to are suddenly not coming to school. So now they suddenly have more money to give out.
Is it appropriate for the parent to write that letter to the financial office, or does the student-to-be have to do that?
This is the one place where parents can get involved, particularly in that letter that says there's been a change in situation. Schools do not expect 17 and 18-year-olds to understand all the complexity of their parents' financial situation and jobs changing and job losses and that sort of thing. So this is the one place where a parent can get involved. Anything else, your kids should do it themselves. They're an adult. It's them going to college. But most schools find it acceptable if the parents get involved in this one area.
Lisa, they always say on any airline flight that no two people on the plane are paying the same price, but that holds even truer for colleges, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, financial aid can be anywhere from, you know, getting 10% of the total cost to kids who are getting 100% of the total cost. So yes, nobody pays the full. Plenty of people pay the full price, but nobody pays the same. It varies dramatically.
Something I did learn in the financial aid Facebook Live on Grown and Flown was have kind of a price in mind. Don't just say, you know, I'd like you to drop it as much as you can. Say, I've budgeted $25,000 a year for my college student. Any chance we can get closer to that? Is that good advice?
You can say that, yes. I mean, they have formulas that they'll work with. So really the two important facts you can bring to them are, first, something has changed in our family, and it needs to be something relevant, obviously. But the second thing is you go with, if you got a better offer someplace else, take that offer and that exact amount and the school that you got it from and be honest, because obviously if there's any dishonesty here, the whole thing, you know, that's not acceptable. But be completely honest and say, this school offered my son this, but he would prefer to come to your school. Is there a way that this can be improved? And schools.
I want more, though.
Yeah, Wendy wants more. Is that all right to want more?
I get that.
She says, she quotes the play Oliver, and she just stands there and says, please, sir, I want some more. It's embarrassing. Lisa, some schools will give a nice discount if you have more than one child going to that same school, and some do like a legacy discount if one of the parents went to that school, right?
I don't know about legacy discount. All schools will take into consideration that you have another kid in college, even if they're not at the same college. That impacts your financial aid calculation because they know you're paying out another tuition. But I don't know about a legacy discount. But the other thing we talked about on that broadcast, Wendy, you might remember, is be careful that the offer isn't just for freshman year.
Oh.
Because, some schools are offering you, you know, $10,000 each of the next 4 years, and that's great. Sometimes there's stipulations about GPA, so obviously you need to talk about that with your student to make sure they understand that they're putting this money at risk if they don't get the grades that come along with it. But also make sure that it's for all 4 years, or if it isn't for all 4 years, what has to happen to make it happen the next year? Parents should be careful not to get lulled in with a good offer for freshman year and then find themselves unable to afford the next year.
Is there wiggle room for upperclassmen, like someone who's listening right now and has someone who's going to start sophomore year, junior or senior year? Is there still room if the family situation has changed to reach out to the financial office?
Absolutely. If the financial situation has changed in the family in any meaningful way, parents should reach out to financial aid. And in that, also in that case, like if it's a junior, the kids may be able to take it. You know, a 20-year-old is different than an 18-year-old. So a 20-year-old may be able to step in and advocate for themselves and say, my parents' situation has changed. One of my parents has had to go part-time rather than full-time, and our family income has decreased accordingly. But yes, you absolutely, any time over the four-year period when something substantial has changed, you should take it to the school.
Lisa Heffernan on the line with us, and she is one of the co-founders of one of my favorite websites. You've been getting a lot of traffic on that website from me alone. Grownandflown.com. We're going to take a quick break and come back, and maybe what to do over the summer if you're planning to go to college, how you can help your kid. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Lisa Heffernan on the line with us. She's a New York Times bestselling author. She's a mom. She's one of the co-founders of Grown and Flown at grownandflown.com. And Lisa, is there something you want to touch on in our segment today that we didn't cover?
Well, you know, Wendy, you talked about having a kid who's getting ready to go off to college, and there's some things that last summer between high school and college is really not like any other summer of life. There's a couple things that parents often ask us what to do that summer, and I could touch on a couple of those. One is get your kid to work. College is expensive, and, you know, most kids should have some what we call skin in the game. They should, if they haven't been working and saving, they should be doing that this summer, and some of the spending money that they take to college should be theirs. The best way I find to teach kids about how to budget money is have it be their own money.
That's a good lesson.
Yeah, there's nothing that focuses their mind. So, you know, most kids can't, even though a generation ago we will all remember that you could actually earn your tuition, that is almost impossible for a kid to do now. It is so much money. We all know how expensive it is. But kids can certainly earn their spending money for a semester or even for a year, and that's what they should be aiming at over the summer, that money that they're going to be spending on those extras. But a couple things we talk to parents about. Try and talk to your kids about how college is a privilege. The one thing we really hope for all of our kids is they go there and the 4 years, they really take advantage of things. They take advantage of the academic, the athletics, the cultural, the social offerings on a college campus. You're never that young with that many things at your fingertips again, and it would be a shame not to take advantage of it. And kids take advantage of it when they feel like it's a privilege. It's not something that was owed to them. I think that's an important conversation for parents to have. One of the most important conversations parents can have is about drinking and I'll say drugs as well. We all know this. We've been high school parents. We know that the issues around drinking in high school. But in college, it really becomes dangerous. There's a lot of research out of the National Institutes of Health about the rise in binge drinking. So your kid's probably going to go to college and drink a bit, even though they're underage, and let's be realistic. But it's the binge drinking that's so dangerous, and really we need to educate our kids on. And that is 5 drinks for a female and I think 7 for a male, and that is something kids are doing these days. And they're going to do it away from us. And the only thing we can do is try and set our expectations for them before we go.
You read in the news, and it just happened several months ago, just a straight-A student doing a great job at college. They found her unresponsive in her bed after a night of binge drinking. So that is definitely a conversation that needs to happen.
It does. We have a piece on our site called Binge Drinking, Unique Danger to the Teen Brain. And we spoke to a world-famous neuroscientist who will tell you that alcohol affects the teenage brain differently than the adult brain. So even things that are not toxic and dangerous for us as adults are both toxic and dangerous for teens. And binge drinking is becoming part of the culture, as dangerous as it is. So that is a really, really important conversation that all parents need to try to have with their kids.
Not to get even sadder, but we had a conversation with our daughters about date rape drugs as well, because that was something that needed to be discussed. So.
Yep. And date rape, I wrote a piece about this for the New York Times. The biggest period of vulnerability for most young women is the first semester of college. They're not really used to alcohol. They're not really used to the social norms. They're seen as vulnerable, and I don't want to point any fingers, but they're seen as vulnerable by older college men.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that you have that conversation. Parents need to have that conversation in the frankest of terms. As painful and uncomfortable as it might be, you're doing your kid a favor.
You don't want to say to your kid you have to be leery of everybody, but to some extent
you do.
Yeah, so.
Sure.
It's awful.
And, you know, the message about not being alone and not walking alone and always having a girlfriend that you can, you know, have a signal between you two that, you know, this just isn't right, come help me, you know, that sort of thing.
One of my daughters, Lisa, is attending school in New York City, and that is a city that is a 24-hour city, and she loves to be out late at night, and I've stressed to her, not everybody's as friendly in New York as you would hope, so you got to be very careful, obviously. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And on a cheerier note, you know, talk to kids about how the expression that everybody gives our kids, and I'll say that sort of the line that everyone gives our kids is, this is the best 4 years of your life. And it isn't always the best 4 years of your life. For a lot of kids, there's an adjustment period. There's an uncomfortable period. You've spent all of your life living with people who love you and who care for you, and suddenly you're living with strangers, really utter strangers.
Yeah.
And that doesn't always feel so good for a while. So to talk to kids about how there's going to be an adjustment period, a lot of parents find it's really helpful to talk about your own adjustment period and perhaps a period in college that wasn't so great for you. Because when kids go to college and they've been told that over and over again and things aren't perfect, they feel pretty crummy, and they shouldn't.
I'm probably a bad example of this. I went away to Illinois State, and I only lasted a little over a semester. I had a boyfriend at home. My mom was a little on the strict side, so I missed the apron strings. I couldn't cut them, and I left. And I've told my son this, and everyone says, you know, don't tell your kid that, because what if he only makes it a semester? That, you know what? It's not the end of the world, is it?
I actually think the opposite, Wendy. I think you've done him a huge service, because he knows these aren't going to be 4 perfect years. He knows mom had a problem, mom struggled a bit. That's what happens to people. He also knows that if he struggles, so if he calls you a month into college and says, I don't have close friends yet, I'm really upset here, I don't love it here, he's going to find a sympathetic ear. You understand that situation, right? And so I feel like you've done him a huge favor, and I feel like that's something that parents can offer their kids.
Can parents call you, Wendy, if they need more advice?
Yes, but I'm already crying with Lisa saying this to me. He went away to Ireland for a week with his school choir last year, and I couldn't adjust, although I made it through, so maybe that was my first step in letting him go to college.
Yeah, it's super hard. We have to remember, it's as big of an adjustment as when they came. So 18 years ago, they arrived in our homes, in our families, and they changed our lives and turned our lives upside down. This is as big of an adjustment. And parents should go easy on themselves. If you are feeling really down about it, if you are missing them terribly, you are just a normal parent, and you should not beat yourself up. And people will say to you things like, aren't you happy that they're gone? Aren't you glad they're in college? Don't you feel glad for them? Feeling glad for your kid is not the same as it doesn't mean that you don't feel sorry for yourself. Those two things don't contradict each other. So parents should find a little way to baby yourself. Give yourself a little treat. You know, go easy on yourself. Talk to other parents who are going through the same thing at the same time and will understand, because it is difficult.
I know, Bill, when your daughters went away, it was a huge adjustment.
Oh, yeah.
I like to think it's a little easier with texting and, FaceTime.
It is.
Because when I went to school, you know, there was one phone in the hallway that everybody would wait on to call someone. So it has to be, you feel a little more connected with social media, FaceTime, and
Without
texting.
Without a doubt, yeah.
Yeah, one of the apprehensions I think we have as parents is that we did go to college in a different era, and that is our memory, and we are extrapolating that with our kids, Wendy. I think you're absolutely right, and it will be completely different. We contact our children at far more regular intervals.
And they contact you, too. Don't you get a lot of texts from your daughters?
A lot, yep. Yeah, it's great.
Awesome. Lisa Heffernan, honest to God, if you're listening right now and you have a kid going away to school, you have a teenager, maybe you need great high school graduation gifts, you'll find it all on grownandflown.com. One of the co-founders, Lisa Heffernan. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you.
Bye, Lisa. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill and Wendy. We have our friend, our clinical psychologist. Can we say psychologist of the show, maybe?
I think, yeah, I think John qualifies.
I need it more
than
you do.
Well, but he's here to help everybody, I hope.
John Duffy is here. Undue Anxiety is his podcast that you can find on WGNplus.com or iTunes. And your book, The Available Parent, is quite helpful to me. First of all, hello.
Hi.
We were
enough of the small talk.
I know, I got to get right into it. We pay you by the half hour, whatever. So yesterday, Bill and I were, I've been binge watching Hoarders.
Yes.
I've heard of this show. I'm on the cusp of being a hoarder, but I don't know that that's necessarily true after watching the extremes in which these people hoard.
Right.
They can't move in their house. They neglect bills or can't afford it. Plumbing is turned off.
Yeah.
There's a lot of filth. There are roaches. I mean, at that point, you'd think you'd look around and go, oh, my God, what am I doing?
Yeah.
But they don't.
No. A lot of hoarders, real hoarders, and the show is an interesting thing because it kind of sensationalizes this and, like, you know, and mocks it to some extent. You know, there's a little wink and a nod there. But the truth of the matter is, this is a really painful thing for families. And a lot of the hoarders themselves, and you see this on the show sometimes, have no insight into the fact that what they're doing is a problem. I mean, they almost feel like, well, the rest of you have a problem. I'm just keeping some stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
But there are deep emotional issues that have them keeping that stuff. And that's what I think isn't addressed sufficiently on the show. And why I think you probably are not a hoarder, Wendy, because you have insight into the things that you keep and collect.
But they're showing, on the television version of it, they're showing extreme cases. They're finding the people who have really, really, really serious hoarding problems. But it can come in different degrees, right?
You know, it's if you think of it like a spectrum disorder.
Yeah.
I was listening earlier, and you were talking about some of the things that you collect.
Yeah.
Bill, you know, and I collect, for whatever reason, I collect books and boots, and, you know, and sometimes it's just having a few things around that are familiar to you,
right,
give us a little bit of comfort, right? It's kind of like nice to have your stuff with you. And I know Jim has some Star Wars stuff, you know, and it probably makes him feel really good to go into that Star Wars room and, you know, just kind of enjoy being in there.
He does. And he displays it and it's not messy. So
right.
That's the difference.
And the other difference is, whether it's something like I really enjoy and this makes me feel good on occasion, but I can go and live my life unencumbered without it, 99% of the time, and then I can come back and refuel my batteries in this room. Where hoarding becomes a problem is if it kind of takes over your life and there are emotional and physical and social and financial and, you know, deep repercussions throughout the family that are harsh and negative. And then you know, okay, we've got a problem here, especially if the hoarder is super resistant to getting rid of anything. And sometimes you see on that show, and I've worked with some people who get to the point where they're not just collecting, you know, something in one specific category, but they feel like I have to hold on to everything. Otherwise, I'm losing control of something. I'm not even sure what it is, because it's an anxiety issue, and control is a big part of it.
I have a couple of those, though. I was telling Bill yesterday, I save things because it's like, oh, I might need this someday. Sometimes I like to do crafts, so sometimes I take these, you know, metal lampshades without the fabric and use them in the garden or whatever. But what did I say? It took me like 8 years to come up with that project. Yeah. And here's a weird thing that I shouldn't be revealing on the air, although I think I have. When I was younger and I would get something new that I loved, I slept with it.
Yeah.
All the time. I mean, like, I'll never forget these granny boots I got when I was in, like, probably fifth grade. They were black patent leather. They were so cool. I didn't sleep with them on, but I slept in the box. They were next to me, right next to me, and I hugged them all night. So I love stuff.
What did you get out of that?
I just knew they were there, and it made me feel comfortable, and I loved them, and I knew nobody would take them, and I just, I don't know. But that, I think, is borderline hoarder.
I don't know. I think that's the teddy bear effect. You know what I mean? I think it's kind of like I find comfort in this particular thing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as long as you're not still doing that, which
no,
I'm going, I'm
just with Jim.
I'm riding on that.
Right. He's the only thing I sleep with.
Then I think it's not wholly maladaptive. In fact, you can come up with a reasonable argument that that's fairly adaptive, but it becomes maladaptive when you collect everything in that category or everything that reminds you of your grandmother, you know, because you can't stop grieving the loss. You know what I mean? It's things like that where it's got this deep, deep emotional connection, and you need a lot of things in order to feel comfortable. You know what I mean? And even then, a lot of hoarders feel like, I'm not there yet. You know, I've worked with somebody who has hoarded to the extent where he rented a warehouse and filled it with stuff like you wouldn't believe, and still felt like, I think I need more in order to be okay. And, you know, and it feels so wildly irrational, because the question is, well, what does that mean? Like, if I took this box out, what would that do to you? Just don't take the box. I don't want to know.
I've said don't touch my stuff on numerous occasions. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean. I'm on the cusp.
And I think it is a spectrum thing. And I think you're in this position where you can kind of reset. If you feel like, well, I have some hoarding, you know, inclinations, I can reset that now. Now that my house is a little emptier than it used to be, I can be selective about what I bring in here, and maybe I'll just keep one or two things in that category that mean something to me, really, instead of holding on to everything.
And a lot of times, and I know this with me at a much smaller degree, but some of these hoarders, you see bags and bags of things that I got to tell you, I'm sure they don't know. Like, if you picked up a bag, I don't think they'd say, oh, that's my sweater from that. But once they start looking through it, they'll go, oh, that's why I saved it.
Right.
But the garbage is what I don't understand. A lot of these hoarders, piles and piles of stuff. There was this one, I don't know if he was like a 12-year-old boy. His mattress was on top of a pile of junk, garbage, and his mattress was on top of that, and he slept on that.
But is that a version of what you just described?
Oh,
about, it's
how?
Not.
I mean, like, 3 feet of garbage all over the whole floor. Yeah. His parents put the mattress on top of the garbage.
The only place it would fit.
Yeah,
right?
And he slept on that. They ended up finding the father's on oxygen because he has breathing issues. They were showing cobwebs that were filled. It looked like a spook house.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an oxygen tank underneath the kid's bed that started leaking. It could have exploded. At point, it becomes a danger.
Yeah, a lot of these hoarding households become fire hazards. And what you're talking about begs the question of, you know, why do people do this? Like, you know, this is a bag of garbage. You know, it's clearly worthless. But if you talk to somebody who is truly a hoarder, there's usually one of two things going on. There's a control issue. There's almost always anxiety. And sometimes there's something post-traumatic. It's kind of like, you know, it reminds me of eating disorders to some extent. If I surround myself with enough stuff, regardless of what the stuff is, I feel safer. You know,
yeah, no one will come into your house.
Walls.
Right.
That's it.
You've built walls that make it harder to penetrate.
And sometimes literally. I mean, you know,
why are newspapers so often a component? A lot of people who are hoarders will have stacks and stacks of newspapers. And why are cats almost always a component?
Good question.
It's a sad answer, I think, the answer to that question. A lot of hoarders are homebound. And so they are kind of relying on the things that come to them or are already with them. So the cat lives there. The newspapers come every day, and you can convince yourself, well, I might want, this is from 1977, but I might want to refer to it one day. It might be important one day.
Yeah.
And so that's a convenient way to build your walls without going out and creating it with stuff you bring in from the inside on your own.
When you say it like that and explain it, it makes me understand it more. Mm-hmm. Not that I accept it more, but I understand how people can get to that part where they're not letting anything
go. But if you say that to somebody who has that, will they realize it? Is it easy for them to realize, wow, I never thought about it, but that's why I have newspapers and cats all over the place?
It's a great question, because you would think, like, boy, once you point out, isn't this the craziest thing that you're doing here? You know, like, let's look at it from the inside out. It is really resistant to treatment. Right. It's almost, I don't know if you've ever heard of the term body dysmorphia, but it's where somebody looks in the mirror and they see something different than what everybody else sees.
Yeah.
Oh, I look like I'm 20 pounds overweight. No, you're actually quite thin. The same thing happens with hoarders. They'll look at the enormous mess or the mass of stuff and say, I'm not sure what you guys are talking about. So it's
I'm
really
the normal one. You guys have the
right
problem.
Right.
I've
so
heard that a lot.
Unless you get down to what's going on emotionally underneath all that, just the visual does very, very little to change a hoarder's mind and make them recognize, ooh, I got to do something to change this.
All right. Well, I am catching. Is there a Hoarders Anonymous? Because I really feel like part of the problem is going, I have the potential of being a hoarder, so I'm aware of it. Does that make me ahead of the game?
You're definitely ahead of the game. There is a Hoarders Anonymous, by
is
the way.
Is honest to God?
Yes, there is. And there are hoarders groups, you know, in the suburbs out where we are. There's a number of them. We talked about how prevalent this is. You said 3 to 5 million people. About, you know, 2 to 5% of us suffer from hoarding, but just looking at the population of people I work with, I'd argue it's significantly higher.
It's got to
be
higher.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. 312-981-7200. We're talking with Dr. John Duffy. You can find him at his website, drjohnduffy.com. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
Does that place Order from Hoarders still exist? Because they should be sponsoring this segment. They're missing out.
Oh, my God, you are so right.
I don't know if they're still around, but I'm going to make some calls.
Dr. John Duffy is visiting with us. Really, I thought that this was such a small niche of people when I started watching Hoarders, so it amazes me that there are so many hoarders out there.
Yeah, I think this is actually kind of a growing thing, just like most anxiety-based disorders. I think things are, you know, we are becoming a more and more anxious culture, and for those of us who are homebound, home a lot, this is I hate to say it this way, an efficient way to help regulate your anxiety, you know, and without interfering in lives outside of your home. What often happens, though, is that it becomes this secret within the home, and it starts to affect everybody, because we can't have people over because we have this hoarding thing. There's all this stuff around, and you know, I don't want you to tell your teachers, kids, and you know, we've got to keep this unto ourselves, and that's always a toxic thing for a family to carry on top of the hoarding issue.
Laura wants to talk about that precisely. Hi, Laura. Hoarding affects not just the person hoarding, but others as well.
Oh, definitely. Hi, Bill and Wendy.
Hi.
I dealt with this firsthand, and I had to bail out my sister-in-law. Their house was my her husband died, which was my brother, and the house was a mess. I mean, beyond a mess. There were fruit flies. There were so many fruit flies. It's like, I think I'm going to start naming them, because it was, that was the only relief I could get.
Did this happen after your brother died? Like, is this when the hoarding began, or it was always like that?
Like what the doctor said, it was after my mother died, which was over 30 years ago. So they kept everything. And, you know, the mail, they had like 3 years worth of mail, but they also had everything, like the doctor said, everything that came to the house, you know, pamphlets, everything. And it was a mess. And it took a toll on not only me physically, but also, you know, my family members, you know, my marriage. And,
that
you know,
bad.
It was rough. It was rough, yeah.
Oh, yeah, we can hear in your voice, Laura, that this was traumatic for you, right?
Yes.
How can I ask? How did you resolve it? You know, so in the wake of all that, how did you shift the problem if you were able to at all?
Well, my sister-in-law, I guess maybe the bright side is that, you know, I mean, she suffered a stroke, so she wasn't able to speak. So, you know, I had to say, this is what we're going to do. I had my older brother. We had to clean out the house. I mean, I don't know how many bags of garbage he threw out. And it took over 6 months. And, you know, and then we finally got a routine for her. Well, me. I mean, I have to go over there and check in on her. I hired someone to check in on her as well, to prepare her meals, do her laundry. And I mean, the house is like bare bones, but I mean, it's safer for her.
And it's clean.
Yes.
So sorry, Laura, that you're going through this, but you're a great sister-in-law.
Yeah, well.
No doubt about that. You know, and it's kind of a clear mandate for anyone suffering from hoarding or any other psychological issue, recognize that this isn't just you that's suffering. So, you know, there is this kind of mandate to do something about it while you can, because, Laura, you're kind of suffering so unnecessarily. And if they had done something when they could, maybe this would have spared you, your husband, your marriage, some of what you've suffered too.
Yeah, and like you said, they're isolated, you know. I didn't communicate with either one of them because I tried, you know, but they just wouldn't respond back. So I just left it alone.
There's so much shame involved in it,
sure.
Right? Yeah.
Thank you, Laura. Continued healing for you.
Sure. Thank you.
John, at the outset of this, we were trying to figure out the differences between somebody who just collects things and somebody who becomes a hoarder. Does one tend to lead to the other if you're a collector and you just have that completist attitude? Does that lead to it or
it
not?
It actually tends not to.
No.
Collectors tend to be very aware of what they're doing. And they know what it does for them.
Yeah.
Hoarders are not particularly aware, and they're hoarding in order to satisfy some psychological need that's far deeper than the need that's fulfilled in just collecting things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, good news there.
Yeah.
What is the success rate for someone who realizes why they've been hoarding? Like, if you can get to the inner core and find out why they've been doing this, will that prevent them from hoarding again?
If they're willing to seek out treatment, so a combination of therapy and medication, the success rate's pretty good. The trick is to get them there. And that is a trick. You can hear it in Laura's voice just a moment ago. Hoarders tend to be very, very resistant to any kind of treatment just because they've created a comfort zone for themselves, right? So to get them out of that zone and into a treatment center is very, very difficult. Once that's done, the success rate's pretty good.
And it seems, you know, that they're avoiding the present and almost living more in the past. Like, no one can come to their house. I mean, some of these people on Hoarders, you hear like their child hasn't come to see him in 9 years.
Right. Right. No, absolutely.
Like I knock on the door. My mom won't let me in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're either living in the past or, you know, and kind of bemoaning that, or living in the future and the hoarding is kind of like barricading themselves from whatever horrible thing is coming. But they're never living in the present. And you know, if they could kind of just wrap their brains around that particular issue, Wendy, I think their lives become much easier much more quickly. Good point.
All right, I have to go to Hoarders Anonymous before I get there.
You should go.
Thank you. Undoing Anxiety is your podcast. It's excellent. If it's not something that affects you while you're listening, it's something that you can take from it all the time. You do a great job with it at WGNplus.com and iTunes.
Thank you.
Thanks, John. We'll take a quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. You know what the best thing about, one of the best things about Ryan Burrow is, Wendy?
He has many.
Got many good things going for him, but he's not afraid to tell you the truth. He'll tell you it's 72 degrees outside right now. It's the middle of February, but Ryan's not afraid to tell you it's 72 degrees. But then he'll also be cautious and say, but winter's coming back.
But wait a minute here. Yeah. We need more theme music where we can like shift the sound from happy noise to right. doom and gloom.
Right.
Do you think we're out of the woods for another blizzard? Because someone... I don't know if it was Kevin or if when Elif was here, we wondered when the last, how late in the year a blizzard happened.
April. I could see opening day on both the north and south side being chilly. I mean, we've seen that before, right?
I don't think we'll see a blizzard, but what Ryan says again is true.
Yeah.
We're going to get plenty more cold weather and probably more snow before it's all said and done. But on a day like today, you go, what are you talking about? It's in the 70s. You're not going to see any more snow.
Also factor in the last 5 days have been so warm. I got to believe the ground has been warming up.
Sure.
So once we do get some snow, which sounds like maybe this weekend, you know, you think it would. There we go. you think that maybe it would melt off pretty quick.
I was going to. The other day, I've got an industrial sized scraper in my back seat, and I thought, I should really put this in the house. I'll put it in the closet, and I'll see it again next year. And my hand wouldn't pick it up. It's like, no,
I haven't put the shovels away yet.
Nope.
I refuse to do it because the day I do it,
right.
there is going to be a blizzard.
Right. It always works that way, doesn't it?
They were expecting, the city of Chicago is expecting 50 inches of snow this winter. They were loading up with salt. We haven't seen snow since the week before Christmas.
Yeah.
I mean, it's significant snowfall. We could see maybe some this weekend. But
here's the good news. They are now overstocked on salt for next year.
That's true.
I mean, it doesn't go bad.
They got to throw it out. It goes bad.
Does it
go, go bad? No, it doesn't.
Why do I believe anybody anymore?
I like the idea of, dump it out. Get it out of here.
Salt.
We need this space. We need
this
to clear
it out. This is the 2016 salt.
This is where Lollapalooza will be, okay? We need to clear this out.
this is shocking. Do you want to be shocked?
I'd love to be shocked. Do you have a shock and awe campaign going on?
Yes, I do. I don't know why I didn't know this, but for some reason I didn't know this. Do you remember back in, when would this have been? October? I think October. Somebody destroyed Donald Trump's star on the Walk of Fame, on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Do you remember that?
I do remember that story.
Some guy just went ballistic and he tore it apart. And I just found out who that guy was.
And you know him?
I don't know him, but actually, when I say the name, I don't think people will know him. And then I'll tell you who he is, and you'll all go, oh, he did that to the Hall of Fame star of Donald Trump? It was the work of James Otis.
The elevator guy?
Heir to the elevator fortune.
Otis, my man.
Otis, my man.
Yeah, you're right. It was October 26th that his star got destroyed.
Yeah, by James Otis. A guy who's crazy rich. He's got all kinds of money because of the elevators.
He's really the elevator guy?
Yeah.
I was kidding.
No, it's really him.
I'm sorry to step
on
the outcome of your story. I was kidding.
I don't know why. I guess at some point, because I remember that happening just before Halloween. And then I remember them announcing the man who did it. And he's in his 50s. Like, for some reason, when I hear somebody did that, I go, a young punk. Trying to make a name for himself, but he's in his 50s.
Already has a name for himself.
He's got the name Otis. but for some reason, it just, I don't know why, if people weren't mentioning it until just now.
I never heard the person.
James Otis.
And does he say why he did it?
Yeah, I got it right here. A man who destroyed Donald Trump's star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame has been sentenced to 3 years probation for vandalism. An attorney for James Otis. Now, in this version of the story, they don't mention that fact, but I think that's
key to the story.
If not key to the story, certainly something that makes an interesting story even more interesting.
I guess, yeah.
Right?
It's not key, but it's definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boy, I wonder if Donald Trump takes elevators anymore after this.
Right.
I'll take the stairs.
He knows the Otis family's out to get him. An attorney for James Otis says he pleaded no contest to the felony on Tuesday in Los Angeles Supreme Court. Attorney Mikey Terporten says that Otis...
He's an attorney?
Yeah, I think in...
What are you going to do about it?
In somewhere in Scandinavia. They flew him in for this case. Attorney Mikey Van Purten says that Otis agreed to pay $4,400 for the damage and the attorney's fees and then performed 20 days of community service. Otis used a sledgehammer and a pickaxe to deface the star about a week before Donald Trump was elected president.
I don't think that's right, by the way.
Even
if you
timing?
Don't like Donald Trump.
Oh, just to destroy his star?
Put shaving cream on it or something, but a pickaxe, I mean, that's somebody...
It's juvenile.
It's juvenile, and someone, it's going to cost money to replace it, which they're going to do.
Right.
And then the star is going to be shinier.
Right.
So it's kind of, you're missing the point.
Yeah. Otis said he originally planned to steal the star and then sell it and give the money to 11 women who have said that Donald Trump has groped them.
Which, can I ask, where are those women now?
It's been a while since we've heard from
mm-hmm.
them. It really has been a while. The star was for Trump's work on the reality show The Apprentice. It has since been repaired.
Should he have gotten a star for just that? Boy, they'll give a star to anybody.
Well, I don't know if you know the process of the star, but you apply, whoever star it is, you apply, and then they vote on whether or not they want that star to be on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and then you pay for it. The person who gets the star, they pick up the entire tab on the star.
That seems fair, quite honestly.
I guess so, but with most honors, like normally, let's say they were going to name a street in Chicago after you, you wouldn't have to flip the bill on the signs.
I'd pay them to do that now.
That would be fun. Let's see if we can get that to happen.
Tell me how much I'll pay. I want a, you know, honorary Wendy Snyder way.
I don't want an honorary street. If there's going to name a street after me, I want it to just have my name on it.
You're
so
not...
many of the streets around here have the street name, and then underneath it says Jory Luloff Boulevard. I want the full...
You're not going to get that. I'm sorry.
I know I'm not going to get that.
Go for the honorary. Then maybe after years of honorary, they'll upgrade you.
If I'm a good citizen, maybe. I just think it's half-hearted to give me an honorary. If you're going to give it to me, give me the whole street.
I'd take the honorary.
Don't
you
call
You got to take
it.
What you can get, Bill.
Yeah, I guess.
And so I guess I understand why the Otis Elevator Air did it, because then Donald Trump would have to pay money to replace it, because they wouldn't. Or do they have insurance? I bet they have insurance on their stars.
I don't know the answer to that.
I didn't know the person actually had to pay for it.
Yeah. Which, again, now doesn't it water down the honor? It does a little bit.
Yeah, but
doesn't
I mean,
it?
Look at how many stars are there.
There are, yeah, there's hundreds. Hundreds and hundreds.
Who else is going to pay for it? Taxpayers?
No, I guess you don't want to do that. Then it gets crazy. So
I'll get you one for your birthday.
So
we'll all pitch in.
Thank you for that. Thank you. When they put in the WGN Walk of Fame, they didn't make Steve Bertrand pay for his star.
Did you ask him that?
No. What do you think?
He wouldn't
have
paid for it.
I know he wouldn't have paid for it.
He would have said, then I'm not on it.
I'm out. I don't want a star then. All right. So so that's your story about James Otis. He's the guy who destroyed Donald Trump's star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
That's interesting. I will think of that, and it'll make me laugh today when I'm in the elevator.
Did you notice neither one of us, we did the whole story, and neither one of us said, you know, his life has been filled with ups and downs. Not you. I didn't say it. You didn't say it. Neither of us said it. I'm proud of us for not saying it.
I'm ashamed of myself for not saying it.
We'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and it's WGN.
It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN. Bill reported on a story that they identified the man who defaced Donald Trump's star on the Walk of Fame earlier, but we didn't pay attention?
I don't understand how this got past us, but the man who did deface Donald Trump's star all the way back in October, a couple days before Halloween, is now facing 3 years probation for his acts back in October. The man's name is James Otis. He is Otis from the Elevator Otises. Not in this version of the story, but in another version that I read last night from another news source, it said that the Otis Elevator Company is one of our nation's leading elevator companies. I can't name another one, can you? When I think of an elevator, Otis is the only name that comes to mind.
There's also Schindler.
Oh, there is?
In our building.
There is. I totally forgot about the Schindler Elevator Company.
I just noticed the truck because they were servicing it. Otherwise, I'm telling you, if I didn't see that, I would say Otis is the only one.
Because, yeah. Because we associate Schindler with the Schindler's List,
right?
Obviously, yeah.
So
there are two.
All right, but I mentioned that I would want the honorary street. You said you don't want the honorary brown street sign. You want full blown
street
or nothing.
Yeah.
But maybe I might rethink this after talking to Mary. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Wendy. Yes, you better rethink it.
Why?
The aldermen are changing that rule. You have to be deceased to have an honorary street sign go up. So,
what?
You know, it's just give you a second thought, doesn't it?
Why would that be?
Yeah, I'm not willing to die for an honorary street sign. Maybe a full-blown avenue.
There are so many going up. I mean, it's ridiculous. They have signs all over. You know, you walk down Michigan Avenue, there's a different name on every corner. Uh-huh.
But no one really abides by those names. If you're tooling around town, you're going to go with the real street name. You're not going to go with...
Oh, right. Only if it's your own mother or father or brother
right.
or something would you even know that it's up there. Yes.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, thank you for that.
You're quite welcome. I'm sorry to bring you that sad news.
That's all right.
Your money.
Thank you, Mary Jane. I appreciate
okay.
that.
All right.
So
bye now.
As of now, you could have gotten a street name for you while alive, but the aldermen are now changing that rule just now?
Yeah, as of when Mary Jane called, I looked into this, and DNA Info reports, and this was dated February 16th, living people would no longer be eligible to be honored with a brown and white street sign under a measure endorsed Thursday by a city council committee. So this is relatively new.
Very new.
The new regulations were proposed by 9th Ward Alderman Anthony Beal in the wake of the decision to remove two street signs honoring President Donald Trump outside Trump Tower.
Oh.
The new regulations set to be considered by the full council on Tuesday, and that has already happened, designed to prevent some of his colleagues from making mistakes. In addition to requiring that honored people be dead, the new rules would require that the honorees, quote, distinguish themselves by significant contributions to the city, state, nation, or world. So we'll never be eligible.
Never. Never.
In addition, the regulations would put a 5-year limit on the honor with the brown signs with white lettering coming down unless the council agrees to renew the honor. So a 5-year limit. That's interesting. And in addition, aldermen would be limited to 2 honorary street sign requests, and they cost between $600 and $1,000 per year.
Per year.
So it's not one and done. You have to pay for the upkeep of those, and you only have a 5-year limit. Is it worth $5,000 to have honorary Bill Left
No. No, it is not. So on a regular street, if they name the street, I mean, obviously they've named streets after famous people all over town, they don't have to pay. But if you get an honorary mention of a street, it's up to you to pay. That seems backwards. And I think living people should get the honor. How does this affect, like Kim Gordon lives on Ronnie Woo Woo Boulevard. Are they going to change the name of that?
Please don't. It's been my favorite street forever.
Right.
I live at 222 Woo Woo.
Yeah. You don't want to change that.
Does he have an honorary? No.
He should. He deserves one. He's a great Chicagoan.
You know what we need to look into over our lunch break?
What?
Who were the living people who had honorary signs that had to be taken down other than the Donald Trump? Is it Donald Trump Way? Donald Trump Plaza.
Right. That's a good question. I wonder who lost their street
sign. I feel like
he
might be the only one.
They did it specifically.
And they did it just because
this.
Of this.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I tell you something that you're not going to agree with, and a lot of people are?
Sure.
Trump Plaza's right there. Who cares if that honorary sign is there? It's just honorary, and it's right in front of his building. Who even cares?
They obviously made that part of the deal when they made the real estate deal to put the hotel up, that somebody said, yeah, and while you're at it, it's just a little quick turnaround street. Can you just throw a Trump Boulevard in there? I'm not a fan of his, but I don't care. It doesn't
matter
to me.
I bet he cares.
I'm sure he cares.
Oh, he does.
I'm sure he does.
But that's why you have to now be dead in order.
Yeah.
Boy, that sounds...
Sounds like a bit much.
It does.
Yeah. All right, let's give something away.
Let's do that right now. It's time for the Bill and Wendy Firehouse Subs lunch break. Right now, if you're the fourth caller, 312-981-7200, caller number 4, Kevin, you will walk away with a Firehouse Subs gift card. If you're not caller number 4, You can try again tomorrow, and you can also go to a Firehouse Subs, and if you do ask for the Bill and Wendy special, you'll get the make-your-own sub. Build a medium sub with one of your favorite meats, be it turkey, ham, or roast beef. You can load it with any of the good stuff, lettuce, tomato, mayo, mustard. Of course, you get that pickle spear on the side. The make-your-own sub Bill and Wendy special is only $4.99. Find a Firehouse Sub near you at firehousesubs.com. Firehouse Subs, the hero of all subs. Congratulations are in order to Connie in Algonquin. She walked away with the Firehouse Subs
gift
card.
In record time, Wendy.
Pretty good.
It's our fastest winner ever. We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has next. It's Bill and Wendy WGN. Did Kevin, our producer, just insult you? That's very insulting.
I don't take that as an insult when someone calls you a dingus. It just was funny because he's like, stand by, you dinguses.
Right. There should be some level of respect, even if it's false.
It's a term of endearment for me.
You sure?
It's like a lovable loser term, isn't it?
Yep. That's what
Steve Brule uses it a lot.
I'm not familiar with the work of Dr. Steve Brule.
Then you haven't lived.
Who's that?
John C. Reilly plays this character, and it is, what's it called?
Brule's Rule. No, is it Brule's Rules?
Oh, there's
check it
an
out
online
Dr. Steve
thing.
Brule.
I know what that is. I know what that is, yeah.
It's on TV. It's crazy.
Still, for Kevin to, you and I, we've been very busy preparing the second half of our show, and for him to say the words,
you guys were fraternizing.
Stand by, you dinguses. That's just...
That inspires me.
We were... Let me remind you, Kevin, Wendy and I were chosen as the 78th most important...
I think it was 81st or something
81st
like
most important talk show in
That's
America.
Correct.
When did you hear that news?
That was... Remember they did that Hot Talkers 100?
Oh, the Talkers magazine.
Yeah, we were number 81.
81, I think.
Yeah.
You're the number one dingus in my heart.
That was directed to you, not That's, me. That was a singular dingus.
Actually, I call Sarah dingus, so she's,
you do.
She's my number
Your
one.
Wife?
See?
Yeah.
Term
wow.
of endearment.
Yeah.
I guess. All right.
You took such offense to that.
Actually, I thought it was very funny.
I know.
I thought it was very, very funny. Welcome to the show, everybody. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. Just two dinguses off the street doing a show for you. We're 312-981-7200 if you'd like to participate.
Can we play Dingus Dong Ditch?
Yeah. It's the official game of the show. Yeah, we could play that.
We can't really get into anything right now because we have a big test that we're studying for.
I'm so excited about this. It's an EAS test, and we get so many texts from people who go, when is the next EAS test? We love them. Today's your day. It's coming up very, very soon.
Texter, Dingus is my cat's name.
Is that true?
That's brilliant.
I
love it. I
like that name.
That is. It's better than chicken for your cat.
Okay. Well, what's your cat's name? You don't have one.
See how surly he is? What happened to you, Kevin?
You take a couple of days off.
Why are you so surly?
Remember, he went out of town and he was not welcomed by the neighborhood. So
I
now
remember.
He's see how it comes back
taking
to us.
Taking that out on you and
yeah.
me. There's
I'm crotchety
no reason
now.
For
That's
that.
What it is.
You're too young to be crotchety.
Yeah. Well, get off my lawn.
He's sitting in there whittling. What? He's way too young to whittle and yell at us about his lawn. I don't get him.
He does do something that grandpas do.
What is that?
This is not a grandpa thing.
Yeah, it totally
really?
Is. He'll be like, show, and he does
the whistly thing.
Either he's Woodsy Owl or a grandpa.
Yeah, that you have been doing that a lot, Kevin. What
show?
I don't know what prompted
You're
that.
You working on something?
Yeah, like that. That's from a long time ago. Nobody your age does that.
Well,
Bartles and James guys did that.
I don't even know who that is.
Isn't that
sad? He wouldn't
sad?
Know who that is.
I guess.
Frank Bartles and Ed James, you don't know who that is?
Oh, yeah.
Only Bill would know their first names.
Well, Ed James played for the Indianapolis Colts.
No, not
Colts.
That Ed James.
Oh, okay.
Remember in all their commercials, he'd go, I'm Frank Bartles, and you know Ed. And Ed would just nod. He wouldn't say anything. He would just nod.
Have you ever heard of a wine cooler?
Yes.
This was kind of the first wine cooler,
yeah.
wasn't it?
Yeah.
Bartles and James wine cooler. Sit on the porch for a spell.
Was it like...
Show.
marketed that way?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
And it did okay?
Yeah. They were... Boy, I never thought this would be a history lesson, but wine coolers came out of nowhere, and then Bartles and James, and there was another company called California Cooler. Those were the two big ones.
Obviously, you partook
but then,
in them.
I liked them for a while.
Of course you did, and you liked Zima for a while, didn't
no,
you?
No, no.
Okay, because that's Zima, coming back. Did you hear
I know,
that?
It's coming back.
Thank goodness.
Don't say that, Steve. Zima
it wasn't
was the worst.
Bad. It wasn't bad. It was like a squirt that got you drunk.
But it tasted like...
squirt a little bit.
No, it tasted like gasoline.
But you know what? It was the forerunner because before you could either buy beer in bottles or wine in bottles.
Right.
And
right.
Now going to
Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Everything.
Yeah, there's all a big kinds market for it now. But Zima the taste was really like petrol. It was like gasoline. When I was doing stand-up, there was a club, the Funny Bone, in Schaumburg, and they brought it in. It wasn't going to be on the market for another 3 months, and they just wanted us to sample it and see what we said. And all of us, we drank it, and we all just looked at each other like, you're going to sell this to people? Nobody's going to buy this.
I had it. It wasn't that bad. And somebody's saying you're forgetting about a particular wine cooler that was made by Seagram's.
Oh, yeah, Seagram's is the one. We talked about it yesterday because Bruce Willis was the one who did the commercials for it. Seagram's Golden Wine Cooler. He would sing that song and drink it on his porch. For some reason, every wine cooler company had you drinking it on your porch. There was like no other place anywhere that you could enjoy a wine cooler except your porch.
That's pretty exciting.
No.
We can't take calls right now because we have to do something that makes
EAS
me very
test.
Nervous.
What?
We have to take it out of delay to do it.
Oh, all right.
So we can't take these phone calls right now. I don't trust myself, let alone a listener.
Oh, so when it's not in delay, the potential for a swear word could happen.
Yes.
All right.
Don't make me...
I trust the listeners more than I trust you.
I know.
I think they'd be more likely to not swear. You're the one who I'm afraid might swear.
You could have just not, said that, and they wouldn't have known that they had that freedom.
You cannot operate without a net, and I cannot operate without a net.
Right.
Or Frankie, for that matter.
That was the Frankie Avalon rule of show business.
So I'm kind of bummed we don't get to talk up the EAS test like we have
in the past.
That's
our favorite thing to do.
But now it's going to be in the middle of a commercial break.
Can we do two EAS tests?
I don't think so.
Would that be selfish?
I think you'd get in trouble for doing two of them.
Too many? All right.
All right. So please advise, Kevin. All right. He's dealing with Krista, the engineer, right now.
Right.
We haven't gone live yet, have we?
No, the show's not on yet.
Okay.
You're fine.
I have a feeling this is what that 1 hour is going to sound like when right. we're streaming on right. WGN Plus.
In 2.5 weeks, our 12 to 1 o'clock hour will be on the stream.
It'll be much like what you just heard.
It'll be a lot of this, yeah. A
lot of dingus talk.
Right.
All right, we have to take a break.
All right, and then the EAS test, as requested by you, the listener. Stick around for that and a whole lot more. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We were very inspired when at the top of the hour, Kevin said, stand by, ya dinguses.
Right.
It's always prefaced by ya.
Yeah, yeah.
Ya dingus.
It feels right that way.
It does. And I guess there's a movie. Brian?
Yeah, hi. Hi.
Hi.
I thought you guys should probably feel honored because you've been named it for Frank Sinatra character in a 1960s Western. He played the title character, Dirty Dingus McGee.
McGee, I remember that. I totally forgot about that. Right. I do feel honored.
See, it
now.
Was a compliment.
Right.
Dirty well, Dingus McGee?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brian, thank you for remembering that. That's great. Thank you.
It was a highlight of Frank's career. Yeah, Dirty Dingus McGee.
Yeah.
You darn dirty dingus.
Dingus.
I like that.
It's got a lot of force.
All right. Thank you, Brian.
Okay, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Can I share a feel-good story? There's a lot of...
Wendy, the world right now, I think, needs a feel-good story.
Well, I just love dogs. You know that.
I do know this.
I really do. Yeah. And I want to just tell you, and it may have been covered in the news, but I just find this to be a great story.
Mm-hmm.
There was an 8-year-old boy that went missing in Hainesville. I don't know where Hainesville is, but in Lake County somewhere, so
all
in
right.
Illinois.
Okay.
And this little 8-year-old boy went missing, and it's every parent's greatest nightmare.
Sure.
For a Hainesville family, this fear happened when their 8-year-old boy left his home and was gone for about an hour. Now, it's an hour.
Yeah.
He's 8.
Yeah.
I probably would have called authorities, too.
Isn't there... I only know this from watching way too much TV and way too many movies, but the authorities will always say, well, we can't really do anything until a certain amount of time has passed. It's not an hour, though.
That's to file a missing persons report. I still, I called the police when Tiki got out of the yard.
And how long was your dog missing when that happened?
10 minutes, thankfully Tiki was just in the neighbor's yard sniffing.
But were they able to, what do they tell you if it's been 10 minutes? What do they say?
Well, I called right away. I said the gate was left open and
yeah.
Tiki ran out. Okay, what's his description? And I gave the description. They said, is he chipped? I said, yes.
Because you knocked him into a table once? Is that how he got chipped?
Yes. He has a identification chip in his
ear. Most pets do now,
most
right?
Most kids do, too, now.
What? That's not,
not
true.
Yet.
Cut it
but
out.
The police, she was such an awesome officer, and she said, well, how long has he been missing? I said, he just left. I said, I have my husband driving around, and they said, okay, well, if we see him, we'll give you a call.
Yeah.
And then I called back like 2 minutes later, and I said, Tiki's been found. Oh. He was just in the neighbor's yard. You know, hate to make a big deal of this. She said, no, that's what we're here for. Glad you found
him. Oh, that's very nice.
So 8-year-old boy goes missing. He's not... I'm surprised an 8-year-old does not have a phone by now. I have to be honest with you.
I guess.
Well, the family searched for him. They couldn't find him. So now it's 7:30 on a Monday night.
They're panicking.
They are, with good reason.
Sure.
So the Lake County Sheriff's Office and the canine team of Deputy Craig Somerville and Diesel the dog, his canine partner, were dispatched to their house to help in the search for this 8-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm.
And Diesel was able to gain the scent of the missing child by smelling the boy's pillow. They brought a pillow out to the dog.
Mm-hmm.
The dog sniffed it. After learning the scent, Diesel began tracking and located the boy a short distance away, hiding in the bushes near an air conditioning unit.
Wow.
Isn't that kind of
That's
amazing,
very
though?
Cool, yeah.
The boy was not injured and was reunited with his parents and was grounded for 10 days.
If the boy had been in a vehicle, though, this is an awful case scenario, but it needs to be presented, then the dog's ability to continue tracking the boy goes away, I'm guessing, right? He'd be able to follow the scent to wherever a vehicle had been, and then there's nothing you can do, right? So I'm glad it worked out this way.
Well, see, but then there are more clues, because if the dog all of a sudden stopped near the curb and
you know a vehicle
exactly
right, was involved. Okay, so that's helpful too.
So it just amazes me.
Yeah.
I mean, Tiki doesn't do anything. I've trained him. He knows how to sit. He comes when you give him a pepperoni. That's really it.
What is that?
It's like a Slim Jim for dogs.
Oh, I didn't know they had Slim Jims for dogs.
Pepperoni.
Oh, that's brilliant.
He's just stubborn, but like you talked to Steve Dale about it, and these dogs, you know, it amazes me with the Ron Santo Foundation that these dogs can kind of sniff when your blood sugar is off.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing
yeah.
how dogs can be trained to do stuff.
Right. So do most police forces have a couple of dogs
yeah.
on staff? They must.
They do have, in fact, there was one, I don't know if Steve might remember the story, but there was a canine dog that was shot fairly recently in Chicago and has been retired and recovered, but
yeah.
he was with the officer as they pulled someone over because they can sniff out drugs.
Yeah.
And this dog was shot.
Wow.
Poor little thing.
That's awful.
But yeah, I think every town
employs at least one or two.
I think so.
Sure, because they as you just pointed out, they would have some abilities that human police officers would not have. And pepperoni is to the dog police that a donut would be to a regular police officer. If this was a SAT question, that would be your answer.
I have to tell you a story that involves pepperoni, if I may. it's fun to say. Come on.
I would be disappointed if you didn't have a story that involved pepperoni.
All right. LaGrange, Illinois has a pet parade every year.
You have served as the Grand Marshal of that pet
Yes,
parade.
I have. And it was.
And
I
been
think,
hurt on years where you have not been asked about the
Yes.
Parade. Right.
And I believe last year was the 40th anniversary. I'm not quite sure, but it's been happening forever.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend Lisa always has a pet parade party afterwards.
Sure.
And it's people bring various things. I always bring my deviled eggs and a pasta salad.
Yeah.
And she put a little basket out with a bunch of pepperoni in it. Because people bring their dogs.
Right.
Well, after she saw about five people eating it, she put a little sign that said, these
no.
are for the dogs. It looks like a Slim Jim.
Is there anything in there that would not be good for a human to eat?
I don't know.
But she didn't stop after she saw the first person
no,
or the
didn't.
Second person. She waited it until it took
she did.
Five people. Oh, no. Oh, no. I'm not sure I would attend more parties at her house after knowing that.
I have to tell you, I looked a little carefully at things
yeah.
after that. But I knew right yeah. away it was a pepperoni, but I guess if you don't have dogs, how would you know that?
Was it on the same table as other snacks were? How was it separated
It was off to the side. It wasn't really like next to all the food.
Right. In kind of an ambiguous section that could be for humans and could be for pets. And that everyone has that section.
I don't think there's anything in that that would harm a person. But once you know, it would. Because I've eaten a milk bone.
You have? Yeah, why?
Because my brother dared me when I was younger. It didn't taste that badly. And my teeth were whiter.
I just love that she did nothing after watching four of her guests.
I don't think she just went, wow,
this is something of a trend. Most of my guests are eating the dog food.
She came to her defense. She said, I heard a couple people have been eating these not knowing they're pepperoni, so I'm putting a sign on there. So it's not like she was, you know,
I wonder
pranking
how many
them.
Of my guests will end up eating those instead of regular food. Let's watch. Let's see.
Well, just beware of the pepperoni because it looks very human-like. At least a milk bone, you know it's a dog treat.
Right.
The pepperoni, although who's going to put a bunch of Slim Jims unwrapped in a basket?
Did you say at any point during the party, we are fresh out of Liva Snaps and I need at least one more. I am starving. Please. Just one more. All right. Let's take a quick break. Steve's going to give you the news. And then does everyone know what day it is today? It's a special day.
I forgot until I just remembered our promo.
Should we mention or should we wait? Make people wait?
Whatever you want to do.
It's a magical day, and we'll explain why. Something we can all benefit from. We'll tell you what that is right after the news. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wasting away again in Margaritaville.
Searching for my lost sugar salt. Are you a parrot head?
No, my head's human-sized, Wendy, but you're not the first person to suggest that.
We have not begun drinking yet, may I just point out.
Sure.
It's coming.
All right, Dane Neal is here. Hi, Dane. Thanks for joining us, and you've brought a couple of guests.
Well, you know it's a special occasion, you know, whenever I show up. But you bring up, like, the, you know, the heads. Rob Lowe, traditionally thought of as a very attractive guy. I have heard that in person his head is tiny.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Compared to the rest of his body? Yeah, I guess
would
so.
Would he be bird size? No?
I think so, yeah. I think you could say that about him, yeah.
Okay.
Not with him in the room, but sure.
Enough
sure.
about that. Well,
are you not a Jimmy Buffett fan? Aren't fans called parrot heads?
No, they are. But
oh,
then,
you meant literal.
But then Bill went the whole route of, you know, the actual avian skull.
Sure, of course. I teased this earlier. Today is a very special day, and I don't know if a lot of people are aware of it, but they will be when we're done telling you.
Oh, it is one of those great days in food and spirits and cocktails. It is the one and only National Margarita Day. Mm. And I'm sure the kids are off school. I'm sure at home.
No classes today.
If you've noticed any of the flags half-mast, and
right.
if you're wondering
it's a parking
why.
Holiday.
It is. It is one either. Of those things. And so it is one of those holidays, though, that has a little bit of mystery built into all of that history. So I've got our Pocahontas Indian guide with us. He is one of the top bartenders and beverage directors in the country. Award winning guy, winning contests in Japan and France and the Netherlands, all around the world. Right. He's worked in Miami and London. Blessed to have him here at Untitled in Chicago. It is the one and only Igor Polonsky. Welcome to the show.
Hello, guys.
Thank you for being here, Igor. We really appreciate that.
Thank you for such a sweet introduction.
Congrats. Oh, that's a bunch of great honors. You should be very proud. That's a lot of accolades.
You've been super busy, right?
Oh, you told me. It's been really crazy for me, but it's been an honor to actually be here and talk a little bit about the history of Margarita and really kind of celebrate this holiday with you guys. Mm.
The top spirits people, right, they look for that backstory. You know, it's not just enough that, hey, this is great and it's probably going to have the desired effects. You want to know how it all started.
Mm-hmm. Although it's funny because, Igor, if I may say something you mentioned off the air, when we played Margaritaville by Jimmy Buffett, you said that song has nothing to do with margaritas. And it really doesn't.
Well, it's all questionable. Maybe it does, but the reality is people drink when they make and when they make cocktails, or when they come up with the recipes, and the alcohol doesn't really contribute for improving your memory. So,
all right,
a lot of those classic recipes, what happened to them? There's a lot of people who claim to make the original margarita, and in this case, it's actually really, really a lot of theories. You know, more you try to find out about it, more theories you meet. But there's definitely some proofs that we cannot deny. For example, there's been a recipe in 1937 in Café Royale cocktail book that was not called a recipe for margarita, but it was called the Picador. But the recipe literally says tequila, orange liqueur, and lime juice,
yeah.
which makes it the margarita.
Right.
Yeah, that's the three ingredients.
Correct.
Yeah.
And we cannot really deny that. So that's a fact. So that's been somewhere in 1937.
And where was that?
It's a Café Royal. It's a bar in London, and they had a cocktail book published in 1937, and that's where the Picador recipe is that calls for those ingredients, which essentially is a margarita.
We always assume the margarita probably emanated either from Mexico or from Spain. Would that be a correct assumption or not?
Yeah, there are some theories about that too. For example, it is possible that it had been invented by Don Carlos Orozco when he served a Margarita Henkel, which was a daughter of the German ambassador, and she visited his bar in Mexico, and that was somewhere around 1941, and he was experimenting with the drinks at that time, and his margarita was probably invented.
Yeah.
And that was named after the daughter.
Correct. Or there's another theory that the Dallas socialite Margarita Sames, she was thrown a party in Acapulco during vacation in 1948, and Tommy Hilton was present at that mm-hmm. party, and she was basically serving margaritas there, and he took it to all his hotel chains and basically popularized them.
Really?
See, mm-hmm. you never know where you're going to find that next thing that'll become part of, Americana. Like the guy who invented the Egg McMuffin.
Right.
He thinks he's just, creating something really great, but someone takes it, and then they spread it around the country, and then we think it's been around forever. I would have thought, just the name Margarita, you just think of some more romantic origins, that maybe there was a princess named Margarita,
sure.
and then she gave it to all the soldiers before they went out to conquer the new land, right? And somehow it gave them incredible strength. Igor, does that make sense?
Well, if we're talking about...
You're so Disney.
So romantic, too, Dane. That was very romantic.
There was a cocktail that been around since beginning of 1900s that was called the Daisy. And first it was a whiskey Daisy, and mm-hmm. then it was a gin Daisy, and then it was basically a tequila Daisy. And the Daisy is a cocktail that calls for any sort of spirit, a little bit of seltzer water, a little bit of liqueur, and usually some sort of sweetener, which would be grenadine in some cases. In some cases, it would be raspberry syrup. So bartenders would be really playing around with that. So Daisy, if we translate it in Spanish, would be margarita.
Oh.
But different ingredients in that drink.
Yes, correct. A sort of different ingredient, but the general idea is you have a base spirit, you have a sweetener, you have a citrus, and you have a liqueur.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of would make sense to basically, this was something that was a prehistorical margarita.
We'll never know, will we?
We will never know.
Right.
Why do you think this is? A little over a month ago, my family and I went to Mexico. We went to Puerto Vallarta for a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I love margaritas and tried them in almost every restaurant we went to and couldn't get a good one anywhere in Mexico. Why would that be?
It's an interesting question. First let's talk about what makes a great margarita, right?
Yeah.
Margarita is a three-ingredient cocktail. The classic version is just a tequila, mm-hmm. citrus juice, and the orange liqueur.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with the tequila. So to make a good margarita, you need a good tequila, right?
That's true.
You need 100% agave tequila.
Mm-hmm.
So always look at that label, 100% agave. For example, Patron makes 100% agave tequila, and that the company has been around since 1989 and really conquered that ultra premium luxury tequila market.
Right.
And they use the Asian Tahona method. That's a method, the way they crush the agave.
Yeah.
They basically use a Tahona wheel, which is a large volcanic stone.
Yeah.
So that's something that they had been doing in the villages of Mexico before the modern technology has been invented.
Yeah.
So when they make the Patron, they combine the modern method with the Asian method of crushing the agave with the Tahona wheel. And they also ferment using the fiber from that agave.
Yeah.
So using a great tequila first creates a great margarita.
Mark, I think people have enjoyed margaritas for years, probably maybe to excess in some situations.
Sure.
But as far as the flavors and some of the things that we'll get to enjoy from Igor, but think about it. I mean, Wendy, tequila, he brought up 1989. So this is like recent history as far as an ultra premium tequila. I mean, I remember back in college, people would show up from vacation, you know, they'd go to spring break. They'd come back with this horrible bottle
with
of
the worm.
With the worm in
it. Right.
It was terrible. Yeah. You know, and now you're seeing some of these master distillers come through and make something that is really, it is all the things that you knew and loved about tequila when you were a kid. I mean, an adult kid.
Yeah.
But now you've got it really refined to the ultimate.
Yeah, absolutely. Then we so first is a good tequila. Then always use fresh juice.
Mm-hmm.
That's a key.
It's fresh lime juice mix. If you use a sour mix, it is not a good margarita, in my opinion.
No way. Like it will actually cost you more to buy that sour mix than you just go to the store and buy a couple limes and just hand squeeze it or use like a citrus press or anything. And then use a good quality orange liqueur. You know, the Patron makes Patron Citronage, which is great orange liqueur, you know. Plus, a lot of other brands that make good orange liqueur, you know. So
Grand Marnier and then Triple Sec if you want.
Yeah. Absolutely. So just use a good quality one, you know, and mix it to your taste. So.
And sometimes, like, I'll buy the agave nectar on its own. You can buy, like, a squeeze bottle of it and put a little bit in there, and that makes a huge difference, too.
Yeah, this way you will make a Tommy's margarita.
Yeah,
I don't like it with the agave. I like the real tart,
In this case, what you need to do, you just need to take, like, let's say, two parts of tequila and one part of lime juice and half part of the agave, so you can actually give a balance towards the citrus a little more.
Right.
So and that's what we call a Tommy's margarita. It's just margarita that doesn't use the orange liqueur, basically. Oh. It uses agave nectar that originates in Tommy's bar that is located in San Francisco.
Oh.
And
look at you.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah.
I didn't know I was doing that.
Do you put
do I owe him money? I got to pay him money now.
Do you put the triple sec too?
No. And it's kind of in lieu of the triple sec.
Okay, I'm trying that because I'm not a big orange liqueur lover, and I never knew. I thought it had to be in there.
Doesn't have to be.
Yeah, Tommy's margarita is just as good as a classic recipe.
Yeah.
Bill, I've learned something from you.
How about that?
The drinkologist.
I knew that would happen eventually. all right, more of this sort of talk next. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's National or International Margarita Day?
Well, it's Galactic Margarita
Day. Galactic Margarita Day. More with Dane and Igor next, Bill and Wendy WGN.
Bill, I know you haven't started drinking yet, but hit my button.
Well, thank you. That's the highest compliment I think I've ever been paid.
All right, it's Bill, it's Wendy, Dane Neal is here, and Igor, help me with your last name.
It's Polonsky.
Polonsky.
Mm-hmm.
We are talking about good quality tequila such as Patron in your margarita on National Margarita Day.
By the way, I forgot to mention that Patron launched today a website that is 3wmargaritaoftheyear.com, and you can go there and look some really, really, really interesting margarita recipes. And I checked it out this morning, and there's some really interesting tweaks on the classic recipe that I'm like, oh, you know, I might make that one.
One of the things that Igor says is, like, there's no right or wrong, as long as it tastes good, obviously.
Sure.
Like, bad taste would be a wrong answer. But you've got the classic that he made, and, of course, all those main ingredients and some of the rules that you've got. But and we're going to try those as well. But you took some liberties with one of those. It's It is. It's got a little bit of some creative touches in there with using actual beets and some spices.
Yeah, so I made two drinks for you. So I made the classic with Patron Roca Silver, which is 100% Tejona method tequila. Comes from Patron Distiller as well. And I used their Patron Citronage orange liqueur and fresh lime juice. Just shake it up with a little bit of salt rim.
Classic margarita.
Classic margarita. And I also made a twist on margarita that I made with Patron Añejo. And that Añejo is a private barrel that we picked up especially for Untitled Supper Club. So we bought the entire barrel, and that barrel is extra aged in ex-bourbon casks, which really fits the program that we have. As you know, Untitled is known for our extensive whiskey selection. So I kind of wanted to bring the tequila, and that fits well in our concept. So it has the Patron Añejo Untitled Private Barrel. I also use the fresh lime juice, but instead of agave, I added a little bit of beet juice to dilute that agave, because agave nectar, when you buy it, it's a little thick.
Mm-hmm.
So you really want to add a little water to it. But instead of water, I just squeeze the fresh beets and dilute it with a little bit of beet juice. And there's a little touch of green chartreuse, which is a French herbal liqueur.
It's really good.
Is it really good?
I love beets. You can't taste beet in it at all. You're mainly getting the color from it, correct?
Yeah, I think there's a good like vegetal beet touch in there, just a little bit.
I could have had a
V8. It's healthy. You could survive just on those. Delicious.
That honestly is really good.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's smooth. But now, what kind of the añejo?
So añejo is a tequila that basically passes through extended aging process.
That's the
right?
most expensive of them all,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, typically. Typically is around 2 years, maybe a little less, a little more aged. So in this case, they aged it in ex-bourbon casks for the entire time period.
So are you getting the aroma of bourbon? Are you getting a little bit of the extra flavor of bourbon? What are you getting?
It's richer.
Yeah, you definitely do. So because the bourbon was sitting in the same barrel for, I assume, at least 10 years before they would put tequila in it. So that barrel really picked up that bourbon characteristic, yeah. Which would be your like vanilla and your cinnamon and your baking spices. And that all transfers into the flavor of tequila.
Just real faint scents and aromas and tastes. It's not overpowering.
No,
right?
Not at all. Yeah. No.
And then what's the reposado?
Reposado is basically next step after Blanco. So Blanco would be your unaged tequila, or it can spend up to 3 months, I believe, in the stainless steel tanks, and the Reposado will be anything 3 months to 9 months.
And what's in the original margarita that you made for Bill?
The original margarita is made with Patron Roca Silver, so that's the unaged version of the Roca line, which is outstanding tequila made with 100% Tahona method. So 100% it's made with that ancient volcanic stone, agave crushing method.
So good.
All right, I find these recipes. What is the website again?
You can check out the recipes on margaritaoftheyear.com.
Real quick, are you okay with frozen margaritas? Do they offend you at all? If somebody orders a frozen, you're all right with that?
I'm all right with that as long as there's fresh juice in there and good quality, good quality ingredients.
All right.
And you can see Igor on a regular basis over as the bartender, but mostly he's the beverage director at Untitled Supper Club at 111 West Kinsey, where they've got their own proprietary barrel of the tequila.
Nice. Very, very nice. Can I also ask you really quick, because I like to experiment with flavors. I do pomegranate margaritas all the time. I do grapefruit margaritas. Is there a flavor that we should be aware of that's fun to try?
Okay. So, again, margarita is three ingredients only, right? You want to make your twist, tweak any of those three, tweak two of those, maybe tweak all three of those, right? So use different tequila, use different liqueur instead of orange liqueur. Maybe you want to look around and find a mango liqueur. Maybe you want to find some other interesting liqueur that you think will work well, like pomegranate liqueur, right? Why not? And then citrus, right? Twig citrus. Maybe you want to use lemon instead. Maybe you want to use a grapefruit. Maybe you want to use, I don't know, yuzu, which is a beautiful Japanese citrus, and you can actually find some recipes using the yuzu juice in margaritaoftheyear.com.
Good.
But in terms of flavor, I actually think the grapefruit works really well.
Doesn't it?
Bill loves grapefruit.
Love it. It's so good. Yeah.
Anything spicy kind of works all the time. It's just a natural pairing, I think. Here if we're talking about Mexico, we normally like get a little spice in anything we eat, or in the cuisine, as well as in the drinks.
Yeah.
So any kind of like spicy peppers work, you know, any kind of fresh fruit would also really work. I like guava or something like that, you know?
Yeah. I'm seeing more and more restaurants offer that as an option. If they have several different margaritas, one or two of them are always going to be very spicy.
Yeah.
And it's working. People are loving it.
Absolutely. I love the spicy margarita, and like you shouldn't go too crazy.
Right.
But
right.
Not like a hot wing spicy margarita eating contest.
Right. You shouldn't have to have a fire extinguisher when you're drinking and enjoying a margarita. That's ridiculous. Igor, so good to meet you.
Thank you.
Happy Margarita Day to you.
So good to drink you.
Wendy gives you her seal of approval. Dane, thanks so much. Great to see you as well.
Thanks so much.
That's Dane Neal. We'll take a quick break and then some news and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill Leffen, it's Wendy Snyder, and if you want to be a part of the show, 312-981-7200, that is both the call line and the text line. I found something. Now, this always surprises me, but I keep finding things that interest me on readersdigest.com, and I always feel guilty because, to me, Reader's Digest is something that my aunt would have up in the attic, not something that I'd be reading online.
It is weird you'd read it online. Typically, it was in doctor's offices.
Yeah.
You'd have your Highlights magazine for the kids and pretty much Good Housekeeping and a Reader's Digest for the adults.
Always. Always.
Reader's right. Digest is not just for your grandma anymore. I think that's their tagline.
Do you remember Reader's Digest for a long time had a series going and it would say, I am your spleen or I am your pancreas. And it was an article written as though from the point of view of one of your organs, explaining to you what exactly purpose it serves.
Turns out you read it a lot more than I do.
I guess I did.
I am your spleen?
I am your spleen. I'm your organ. Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes you were in the waiting room a long time. You had to read something. Well, this one I find interesting because it's 50 things that you should do before you turn 50. So I'd be fascinated to know how many of these things you have done or Steve has done. Kevin's nowhere near 50. So I don't know if we can even include Kevin in this.
You don't know that.
Well, no, but he has to do these before he's 50.
Right,
so
right.
He's got
start doing
got
these,
you.
Kevin.
Probably got the most.
I bet I did them all.
But you didn't.
I don't think
how
you've
much
done
you
all
bet?
These. I don't think you've done all these.
More now that he said that.
Well, that's not.
I tainted the betting pool. All right, tell me if you have done these things or if you believe that before the age of 50, this is Reader's Digest's way of saying, make yourself a bucket list, but we're going to help you out because these are things that really by the age of 50 you should have done.
Yeah, but most readers are over 50, so.
Of Reader's Digest? Yeah,
shouldn't
probably.
This have been a young teen?
Yes. Yes.
Should I keep track of who's got what?
Keep
here?
Track.
How many?
Yeah.
How many? Okay.
Make a scorecard.
I'm more worldly than all of you.
Than Steve Bertrand? He's CEO of Bertrand
town.
Travel.
Yeah, but
he's been everywhere.
Travel.com.
Travel.com. all right, now the first one fits right into that. I know you've done this. Use your passport. Don't just get a passport, but use your passport. You've been abroad. Boy, have you.
I still am. I know you guys forget. I have used it, and I just got my new one in the mail.
How about that? How about that?
A renewal, so yes. Steve,
I don't even have to
have...
ask Steve. We know he has.
And Kevin has.
Kevin
oh, yeah.
has.
Have
I
you?
Have. Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
All right.
Yeah.
You have one?
Yeah.
Is it a little tykes?
How did... Yes. So what? It's still a passport. That's hurtful.
How is it hurtful?
Kevin, put a notation that Wendy's answer was hurtful.
Just put a B next to it for bully.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought it was funny, Wendy.
Thank you, Kevin.
More so when you made your lost self laugh there, too. That was good.
That's what we do.
He goes to little countries.
Right.
There you go.
I just visit very small countries. What about this one? Have you cried through a movie?
Yes. Yep. You do a lot.
I cry through almost everything I see.
I
even
cry
if
through
it's a
the
comedy.
Show.
Steve, you've done that. You've watched a movie and just kept weeping through the whole movie, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
What was the movie?
Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, that was sad.
Oh, boy.
That was
Kevin
a sad movie.
Through an entire movie?
Well,
I don't
it doesn't
think
have to
start
be,
to finish.
Right.
I don't think I've done this.
You cold, heartless.
I've been misty-eyed
dingus.
And, like, you
that's
know,
not the same,
emotional,
Kevin.
But yeah, I guess I haven't cried through an entire
You're
movie.
You're afraid to let people in.
Let's try it. Knock, knock, knock.
See,
he didn't
answer.
Let us in.
He would not let you in.
Three yeses and one no for
you.
Me.
Get a no.
Yes.
You get a no.
Looks like I win the bet.
Well, there's a bunch more. Have you, at this point in your life, written a will, your own will? Have you done that?
No.
You have not done that. Steve, I know Steve's responsible. You've done that, haven't you, Steve?
Yes, absolutely.
I know you have.
I have done that.
No, Terry did.
No, I did it because at our last radio station.
You had an endorsement deal.
We had an endorsement deal with one of those places where you would do your own will, and I took them up on it, so I have a will. You're not in it, by the way.
I have a letter.
A letter's not going to count.
It legally will count. It's notarized.
What does it say?
Just.
Dear John.
Who's going to take care of my kids if something should happen to us? We did it before vacation one time.
Is the person who your kids me? It is me?
Yes.
Oh, that's a lot of pressure. Kevin, you don't have a will, do you?
No, I've got nothing cool to give away anyway.
Nothing?
Yeah.
All right.
I know. I'm terrible. All right. I'm putting that on my to-do list for this year.
Have you gotten therapy?
Yes.
Steve?
No.
Kevin?
Does physical therapy count?
Aromatherapy.
I'm going to take that as a no.
I
used
love
to work
therapy.
With aroma. You probably
yes,
had aromatherapy.
I did.
I have had it twice. So yes for me, yes for you, no for you, Steve?
I don't believe Steve. I think he just doesn't want to admit it on the air.
Well, I have had some counseling sessions with
that
my
counts.
Wife.
Well, that doesn't count.
Oh.
That does not count. And Kevin, you said no also?
Yeah, I'm a no.
All right. Make a retirement plan.
I have a 401k. That counts. It counts.
Trying to think if that counts.
It totally counts.
Does it?
It's not a plan. It's a vehicle. If you
right,
I plan listen, to use the money they give me.
Listen to the business
that's the
lunch.
Plan.
You'd sit down with Financial Engines or another fine sponsor.
And Steve's got a point.
Come up with a plan.
I get a lot of anxiety when I hear numbers. I really do.
But
don't
you think like above and beyond the age of 50, you really have to seriously go, well, I have to figure out because you're not going to work for the rest of your life.
Oh, yes, I am.
Are you going to work forever? Yeah.
I've saved nothing.
I'm laughing, but I'm in the same.
I know.
Like all the money we put aside, then I was out of work for a few years. We used it all up.
You borrow against it and then you pay it back.
Yeah.
You know, fully vested in SAG-AFTRA, so I'll get something from them. Social Security, that's going to be gone.
Right.
You'll have Social Security.
Not a lot.
$2 a
month. No, you'll have it.
Yeah. I hope you're right, Steve.
I don't have a plan. The plan is not to retire.
Okay.
How's
that? Why don't you have a plan to get a plan? I'll hook you up with some people.
All right, I got to get a will.
Steve can do it.
Take some baby steps first.
Jeez. All right, so
no
for you
now.
For
I
a retirement
leave early.
Plan.
I got to make a will.
You don't have to leave early. You're fine.
Retirement plan.
So no for you, no for me. Steve, I know you do, right?
A will?
No, a retirement plan.
Yes,
we've moved
retirement
on.
Plan, yes.
And Kevin, you do not.
I mean, I'm planning to one day.
I'm actually going to retire next week.
Thank God.
Okay, I'm going to put it off.
All right, so that if you're keeping score, Kevin...
I'm winning.
Only Steve gets a yes.
Only Steve, yeah.
Only Steve.
He's winning this whole thing.
This one, I hope I know the answer for everybody here. Fall in love.
Oh, yeah.
You, yes. Steve, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Me, yes. Kevin, yes.
Yep.
Write a journal.
I've written a journal.
Have you? With some regularity?
No.
No?
But every once in a while.
Every now and then you jot something down?
Doesn't it count when I make notes on my phone?
No.
That's not
it's
really
not a journal.
Nope. Nope.
Yeah, I got, you know what? I don't need a journal. I got this microphone.
But they say here that it's very important that you actually physically put pen to paper, and it's a good way of letting off steam, it says, counting your blessings and remembering all the funny, crazy, interesting things that happen to you. So even though this is an audio journal, I think they're stressing the importance of physically writing it out.
It is a good idea because I never had a diary. I was never one of those girls.
I am shy. I thought you would have had a diary.
You know me. I am not a dear diary girl. Dear diary, Tommy looked at me in math class today. I'd be like, Tommy, what are you looking at?
Okay, so you need to journal about your need for a financial plan.
Right.
I don't, you know, I've written some things, but not like on a daily basis.
Right. They're looking for that, some congruity.
Although it's good if you kind of get dementia or even just forgetful later on. It'll give my kids something to read when they, after
right.
I die, they find it in the attic.
Yeah.
God, she was weird. That's what they'll say.
You have to decide who to give it to in your will.
Right.
It all comes around.
It gets more complicated. All right, so no for you.
You've written a journal?
I have not.
I have no time for that.
Steve, have you?
I've read other people's journals.
Not the same. They're suggesting you write your own.
I see you as a journal guy with all your travels. You really don't write?
I have started journals.
But not gotten too deep?
I don't think I've ever gotten to day two. You know, it's like, oh, this is it. It's going to happen. No.
It's just too much in this busy world.
And Kevin, for you, I want to stress, this is not a score sheet for Magic the Gathering. This is a physical journal.
Well, I kept the dream journal for a while in high school.
Did you?
Yeah.
It was a part of your class.
No, just for my own purposes.
I think we got to give Kevin the point on that.
Can you bring it in tomorrow?
I don't know where it's at.
I did too. How long did you do it? For
a few months at least.
Oh, I did it for like a week because it was an assignment.
A couple months is
pretty
impressive.
Good.
That's very impressive.
Please try and find it.
I think I had a lot of it online too, actually. I probably could dig it up somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, right.
I'm weird.
Bring it in.
We'd like to know more.
All right. More of these are the things that by the age of 50 you probably should have already done, but if you haven't, hop to it. We'll get to more next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. ReadersDigest.com. Says there are a bunch of things, 50 of them to be exact, that you should have already done before the age of 50. And if you haven't, what are you waiting for? You're not getting any younger. Do these things. It's good to do these right around the age of 50 or before if you can. We're keeping score here on the show between Wendy, Steve, Kevin, and myself, seeing which one of us have followed the plan the best so far. Kevin, who's leading so far?
Bertrand.
It's a tie between you, Bill, and Steve.
Yeah?
I'll make up for it.
Wendy, you have 4. I have 3.
I think you will make up for it.
Somebody says, I'm having anxiety knowing that Wendy doesn't have a financial plan yet. Please meet with someone. Ask Steve for a referral.
It's not a bad idea.
You get one, too. Why aren't they anxious about you having a retirement plan?
They know I'm going to find a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow at some point.
You're going to find Lucky Charms at the end of the rainbow.
I'd rather it be Lucky Charms.
I know you will.
They're magically delicious.
Yeah.
Give Wendy a point for this one.
Yeah. What is it?
Get a pet.
Okay.
Get a pet.
Well, you're the only one who doesn't have that.
Now, shouldn't I get points because as a child I had many, many, many pets?
You hated them all.
Every one of them. My parents would keep buying me pets going, do you like this one? And I'd go, no.
You know, that's why you don't like pets, because they tried to push them on you. Had they just left you alone, honestly.
I think you're right. I'm positive you're
right.
You're
a rebel.
What about your rabbit, Bill? Does that count?
It's not his.
That's my dog. It's recent Kylie's rabbit.
You house it, though.
Yeah. I pay for its rabbit food and rabbit clothes.
Jeez.
We dress him up in rabbit outfits.
We all have pets.
Yeah, Steve. I know Steve does.
Except you can't be in on that.
I don't get a point for
that.
You
hated them.
But I had.
You haven't owned it yourself, though. That was a family pet.
Well, wait a minute. So that you could say that about my pet.
You have a pet now.
Yeah. But you didn't pick it out, right, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, it's my family's pet.
Do you pet it?
Yeah.
Do you take it out ever?
Yeah.
Do you feed it?
Yeah.
Do you love it?
He's getting a point.
Steve, you definitely get the point.
Do you love it?
Do I love it? You know.
That's beautiful.
All right, no Bill and no Bertrand on that.
But it just says get a pet, and we have.
But you don't have a pet. You haven't personally gotten a pet.
But
a pet was thrust upon me.
You have a pet. You have a pet in your household.
Right.
I don't think Bill should get credit for that.
That's hurtful.
Are we giving one to Steve?
Damn right.
I don't think he should either. He doesn't love it.
Steve definitely
How can
gets
you
one.
Not give me a pet?
Because Vince said you love it. What's your dog's name? I knew it.
Doesn't matter.
Does it say you have to love a pet?
No, it says get a pet. It doesn't say love a pet.
I'm very fond of my pet.
All right. He gets a point. Bill doesn't.
That
hurts. No point for Bill.
I hope I don't lose because of this one.
I do.
What is there to win?
Just knowing that
lesser failure?
You win the Reader's Digest Silver Circle Award. pay off your credit cards.
Yes.
Really? Did
yes.
you?
Yes.
Just did it? Well, that's good news. That's very good news.
Just did it.
I know Steve's too responsible to
say
that.
He never has a balance.
Don't carry balance, no.
See?
I'm paid off. Kevin?
Usually I am. I'm currently still paying for a wedding.
Oh, yeah. That makes it tricky. I think we all get a point on that one.
I do too. Yes.
Look up an X.
Yes.
You have done that?
Oops, did I answer that on
the
air?
You did.
Yeah.
Quickly, you did.
Like on a treasure map?
They suggest online, Kevin, but it doesn't say you can't use a treasure map.
Okay.
I wanted to see which ones landed in jail. No, I'm kidding.
Most of them?
Yeah, I looked them up on Facebook and stuff. Yeah.
How cute were they?
As cute as they always were.
Yeah? Did you only stop at... Oh, there they are, probably on Facebook, right? Is that where you saw them?
Yeah,
did
but
you stop
I mean,
right there?
No,
did you go?
I didn't communicate with them, but we've seen each other, a lot of us, at reunions and stuff.
Oh, yeah. All right.
There's no secret there. You haven't?
I've not. No, I've run
into
girls.
I don't believe you because you are a troll on the internet.
I'm not a troll on the internet.
You look at people's
pictures. I respect the rules of the internet. I'm fully respectful of the internet rules, thanks to the Geneva Convention. But I have run into girls that I've dated in the past. I haven't gone out of my way. I haven't, you know, driven by their house or anything like that.
I don't do that.
There's an internet rule. You're not supposed to look?
Anybody can look at anybody.
I think you can look. It's like what you do with the knowledge of, they live there now. What do I do with that?
That's interesting, and you move along.
That's only 12 miles out of my way home.
Right.
You're not supposed to look someone up and then stalk them.
Right.
You just look up just and look see, oh, I wonder how so-and-so's doing. Oh, look, they have really cute kids.
That's the part that
he
makes
looks
you happy.
Happy. Yeah.
Wouldn't you be happier if you looked them up and they just let themselves go? Wouldn't you go, look at that guy.
No.
I dated that guy. He
says relationship, newly single.
Interesting.
That would break my heart.
Would it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mm-hmm. I wish ill will on no one. Honestly.
Is that new?
Just you, Bertrand. And more ill than yesterday. I really don't. That would break my heart if I looked somebody up and they like had fallen on hard times.
Is ill will the only will you have so far?
Poor Will. He's not here today.
Sure, he called in sick.
All right. So you have.
Yeah.
I have not.
I don't believe you.
What would
you're
I do
not
with
honest.
That? What, why would
you
I
just
want...
look to see? Because you're the one who looks to see, oh, if they're ugly now.
If I did, that's what I would want.
But
I
Bill,
would want them to let themselves
go. You probably
go.
Claim you have a pet, too.
You guys aren't being honest on
I'm
this.
I'm totally being
I
honest.
Don't believe you.
I have totally looked up.
Have you?
Yeah.
What was the result?
We're going out for dinner next week.
Kevin, you have or haven't?
I don't think so. I mean, do I qualify for this? I mean, I'm still like the girls
yeah,
I dated were like a few years ago, so it's like I mean,
what
you've
has happened
seen them?
Yeah,
then? Yeah.
Well, I guess more than a few years ago.
Did you have a girlfriend in third grade or something?
In high school, yeah.
You never looked them up?
Okay, sure. I guess I have.
All right. Kevin gets the point.
I just said, like to see.
I almost said guilty. That's not right. It's not guilty.
No, it's totally normal.
I think it probably is normal.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you, I would be it would be a negative experience for me because I would want them to have just let themselves go, and that
well,
and
you're
that's
a mean,
not healthy.
Hateful person.
I'm not mean and hateful. I just
why would you want someone you're not with?
I don't know.
What do you care?
I
what has
know.
Affected them?
I'm just being honest. You said I wasn't being honest. I am being honest.
Well, maybe don't be honest anymore.
You two work so well together because Polly Purebred would never do anything like
right.
that.
I am not Polly Purebred. I just you know what? I hate to see people that are not doing well. Because it sucks.
Yeah. All right. That's
how is
fair.
That Polly Purebred, that... you meanies? We got to take a break.
We will take a break, and then take there's more break. Of these. Kevin, who's winning so far? Is it Wendy?
It's now winning. A two-way tie between Steve and Wendy.
Oh.
Ooh, I can win.
Look at this. Look at this. All right. More of this next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right. If you're just tuning in, let me quickly catch you up. Reader's Digest, that for reasons I don't fully understand, I'm almost embarrassed to admit I read online from time to time, Reader's Digest online.
Well, we get a lot of stuff that we filter through, and sometimes a headline will grab you, and
yeah.
if it's in Reader's Digest, big whip.
Right.
We know you subscribe to that.
Doesn't take long to read.
Right.
Right.
Right. That's true.
I find a lot of interesting things in my AARP magazine.
Do you? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What?
ARP.
Well, in this new installment of readersdigest.com, they say they've put together a bunch of things, 50, that you should have done before the age of 50. It's their kind of bucket list, their guideline bucket list of things that you really should have done by the age of 50. And if not, get to it. You need to hurry.
And if you missed the first half of it, you could always check out the podcast at WGNradio.com.
Right, right. So far, you and Steve are in the lead. I'm a close third, and then Kevin is trailing. But anything can happen.
No, Kevin can't catch
Kevin's
us.
Kevin's not going to catch
that
us.
That can't happen.
That
for the
happen.
Record, actually, Bill, you and I are tied.
Are we tied now?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, all right. You're making up quick ground on me then. All right.
Please come in last, Bill. Please come in last.
Says Polly Purebred.
Whatever, underdog. underwear.
All right. What about this one? Volunteer at a homeless shelter.
I have done that.
Have you done
at
that?
At a bed's, yes.
I've done that.
Now, I have done
have
food
not.
Pantries
I
many
times.
Oh, that counts.
Does that count?
A food pantry, pantry counts.
Spent
Kevin?
The night at homeless
I
shelter.
Did a food pantry once, but it was because of I needed like service hours for a class or something like that. Does that count?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think
okay.
that
you
counts.
It.
Yeah. So all right. So we all get a point on that one.
I said if I ever get out of here, I'm going to come back and volunteer, and I did.
Oh, well, that isn't that nice? That's very nice. Go to the library.
I go a lot.
Do you?
Yeah.
And take out books? Or
no, watch Nick? Porn. I watch porn there. You can, you know.
I know you can.
No, I do go to the library a lot. I really do because I like home improvement and crafting
right.
and plants.
Yeah.
So I go very frequently and take books out. More in the summer.
I don't do it often, but I have done it. It's always weird, though, knowing that so many other people have handled your book.
You know, that's part of the privacy that I don't like because remember you used to be able to get the card and see who
yes.
else has read the book?
Not anymore.
No, because it's, you know, it's a violation of privacy to know that someone HIPAA else
laws.
Read the Peter May
it's,
novel.
Hey, it's not HIPAA laws. Two, what do you care who's looked at the book before you?
It's just fun to know who's perused
yeah,
the book
Yeah, it's
kind of
cool.
Yep. I'm with Steve. I get it. I totally get
you
it.
You were from a small town.
Oh, look.
No, because then when you see that person, you could go, hey, did you all, you and I both read this book about the Lusitania.
And they say, what, have you been stalking me?
It's not stalking.
You know, now that I'm listening for it, you really are much meaner than I thought, Wendy.
What happened to Polly Purebred?
It's over.
All right, so you, yes, on the library. Steve, yes. Me, yes. Kevin, you've been.
Yeah, it's been a while, but yeah.
You've gone to the library. Visit a national park.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Me too. Kevin?
Of course.
Yep. What was your national park?
Starved Rock.
Yeah.
We didn't get out very far.
Starved Rock counts. That's in Illinois, but that counts.
We've seen others, too.
Steve, you've done a bunch, I'm guessing.
The Smoky Mountains. Does that count?
Yeah.
In Kentucky?
Yeah. That's a national park.
I've been to the Allegheny National Forest. I've been to tons.
That counts.
I love forests.
Acadia for me in northern Maine. All right, so we all get a point on national park. Take a class.
Oh, yeah. I've taken so many classes. I really have.
Since school's ended for you? Have you?
Yeah.
Like what? What'd you take?
Photography class, yoga class.
Oh, does that count a yoga class?
Well, it's a class.
I think that counts, yeah. I think you get that. Kevin?
Yeah, but apparently my classes have not worked because I somehow have us all tied right now.
No, that can't be. Steve and
you didn't
Wendy
take
are still
math?
In the lead.
I didn't take math or tallying 101.
Steve, you've taken some classes over the years.
Well, if yoga counts, then yes.
Yeah.
I feel a little sleazy taking that one, but I will.
All right. Are you having a Christmas party in the newsroom?
It's Judy Pilak. They're getting ready for the big bowling party tonight. Going on?
It's a funny thing. There are a lot of empty rooms up here, but
no, they'd all like to hover around
you. Chosen you. All right. So we all get a point on that one.
What class have you taken?
First class.
You have not.
Improv.
Yeah, I've taken
classes.
A bunch of Second City classes and acting classes and voiceover classes.
Since you've been out of school? Oh, I took voiceover.
Oh, this has to be after college?
Yeah, since you've been done
not
with
in school. Of course you took a class in school.
I'm trying to think.
Not as many people as you think, Wendy.
Wait, Kevin may lose a point here.
You know what? I might have to deduct a point for myself here. All right.
Everybody gets one but Kevin for take a class.
All right, so we're not all tied. It's everybody leading me.
I think Wendy and Steve lead me by a point and I lead Kevin by a point right now.
All right, we're going to start fresh with that. So what is it?
Steve and Wendy both are 1 point above me.
And then one for Bill, you have zero.
Okay.
We're starting over.
All right. Be an election judge.
No, but I've always wanted to do it. I'm sure Bertrand has.
Steve, you have, haven't you?
I have not.
You've not?
Oh, my God. Will you tell them to shut up?
They're throwing a birthday party up here.
Violetta's birthday.
Oh, it is, yeah.
And Rob Martyr's as well.
Oh.
No.
We're on the air.
They were Siamese twins. Did you know that?
Well,
should I not say that on the air?
No,
they were.
It was fine.
Everyone knows that, right?
The separation surgery took a long time. I mean, first of all, they couldn't find Violetta.
Right.
And then they saw he was attached to Rob.
Right. All right. I have not been an election judge.
No.
I've wanted to be, though.
So nobody gets a point on election.
I'm surprised,
judge.
Steve, you haven't.
No, I've covered a lot of elections.
Yeah. It doesn't count.
Forgive someone.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I forgave you.
I'm looking forward to that.
I don't forget, but I can forgive. I really can.
Yeah.
People make mistakes. People say stupid things.
Agreed.
And, you know, have you?
Oh, yeah. Many times.
A lot?
Not a lot. A couple times. Once. Steve, you have.
Sure.
You're a good person.
No,
Kevin?
But I have.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We all get a point
That's
for forgive somebody.
That's a dumb question.
Plant a garden.
Absolutely. Bertrand does, too.
I'll answer for
there.
Me.
You have, Steve. I know
yes,
you.
Yes, I have.
All right.
He's
so
my
you
garden
both...
buddy. We share gloves.
You get a point. Steve gets a point. I lose a point. Kevin, you've planted a garden?
Well, I used to help my dad.
That
Does
counts.
That count?
Yeah,
okay.
I think so.
You've and never I... dug in the dirt?
No. That Billy doesn't
boy.
Appeal to me.
You should take a gardening class. Kill two birds with one stone there.
Oh, I took a container class, too.
A container class?
Yeah, planting containers and stuff, yeah.
Out of closed boxes, seal envelopes.
Right. climb the tallest mountain in your state. Now, the tallest mountain in
Thank
Illinois,
God I live in Illinois
is Mount Prospect.
I climbed that.
You've been to the top of Mount Prospect?
I haven't climbed a mountain.
No.
Climb every mountain for
You don't get points for singing the song. I've not climbed any mountains. Steve, you?
No.
No desire either.
I have.
Kevin, you have?
I was past summer in Colorado. What about
Here
skiing?
Here he comes.
No, it says climb the tallest mountain in your state.
Well,
none of
it
us
doesn't
have
apply
none.
Then.
Well, that would be actually Kevin and I have. It would be Galena.
Yeah.
Well, I've been to the top of Galena. That's not even a mountain. That's just a slope.
Skiing?
No. Well, does Galena have skiing? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah.
It does.
Is it Chestnut Mountain?
Yeah. Yeah.
I've not been on a mountain.
You lose a point.
So who's getting points on this one?
No one.
Okay.
You don't think we get one?
You weren't in hiking gear.
Oh, now we got to dress for it,
You don't need hiking
gear
for...
You haven't climbed a mountain. Come on, be honest.
I have not climbed a mountain.
See?
I went up to 12,000 feet last year.
Okay, but not in your home state.
Not my home state.
It says
were you
in your
driving?
State.
No. We were hiking.
We all get a no.
Nobody gets a point. Nobody gets one.
Quicker.
But this one, I know the answer. This one's silly. Be alone. Who hasn't been alone at some point?
I love it.
Wow.
Seriously, I have two teenage boys and a third teenage boy that I'm married to, it seems. It's nice to be alone sometimes.
But who, by the age of 50, at some point, everyone has been alone. That one's...
You're the one who wouldn't go to a movie alone.
No, I've been to movies alone. I can't go to a restaurant or a Cubs game alone.
See, that should be more specific, because I enjoy going to a restaurant alone.
I kind of do, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not, I mean, not on a regular basis, but
every once in a while, you can just sit in a nice restaurant by yourself.
I don't. It's not that nice.
Oh,
but I don't mind just sitting. I mean, it's
you get extra crispy original recipe.
Do you bring a book? Pretend you're reading.
No, just my phone.
Oh, just play on the phone the whole time. Yeah. All right. So everybody gets a point for that one. Play an instrument.
Yes,
you've done that.
Piano, flute, guitar.
Yeah.
Drums for two lessons.
Yeah.
And I sing.
All right. You get a point. Kevin?
Yep.
I know you have.
Bass,
in a band.
Guitar.
Steve?
Xylophone.
I'm going to say, yeah, I took guitar lessons when I was young, and then I bought a guitar a few years ago to try to teach myself again to play.
I took guitar lessons for, as you know, for a six-month period. It was not pretty. I get a point for that.
Yeah,
sure. Right, we all get a point for that.
Were you in school at the time? Was this as an adult?
It was not part of my school.
I guess
but
it doesn't
I was still
matter.
In school.
You play triangle really well.
Yeah, I'm a good triangle player. Eat something that you hate.
Yep.
Sure.
I mean, I've tried it. I don't remember, but
right.
I would try anything.
At some point. And Kevin, you have too, right? All right.
Yep.
We all get a point on that one. We'll go into our final round in just a little bit. This is from Reader's Digest. The things you definitely should have done by the age of 50. How many of them have you done? We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill and Wendy, and we were talking about some things that you're supposed to do before you hit the age of 50. One was go to a national park, and a listener called you what, Kevin?
Starved Rock is not a national park. It's a state park, according to the caller.
All right. Well, I was looking at nationalparks.org to find out. I was at Mammoth Cave National Park, and that's in Kentucky, so that counts.
No, you still get a point.
You keep a point.
You keep your point. Several people have texted us. We were trying to determine, because they say on here, you should climb the highest mountain in your state. Illinois, not exactly the most mountainous of regions. Several people have said that Charles Mound, which is located outside of Galena, is the highest point in Illinois. So if any of us have been there, we would get the point.
We still didn't climb it. We still get nothing. Go ahead.
Nobody gets a point on that. What about this one? Have you, before or after the age of 50, written a poem?
Yes. Mm.
You, yes.
I have written one.
Steve, you have or have
I
not?
I have written a poem, sure.
I have. There was an old man from Nantucket.
No, no, no.
Can
not
I do this?
One.
I can't do it?
Kevin?
Didn't write that. Yeah, I have to.
All right. Everyone gets a poem point. Make a huge mistake.
Every day.
Right.
I've made huge mistakes.
Again, this one applies to everybody walking on the planet.
Yeah.
Right? Who has not made a huge mistake? Everybody has.
Even people under 50.
Right.
People over 50.
People who say they haven't are making a huge mistake.
Right there. Yeah. We all get a point for that one. Go on a ride-along with a police officer.
What?
No, but I've always wanted to.
I don't know that they would. Would they allow that? If you called the police station and said,
I
want to be in the back of the squad car tonight, they would let you do that?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, I think they would. There are different commissions you can get on.
Interesting. I've not done it. You haven't, Steve?
I have not.
You have not, Wendy?
No.
And Kevin, you haven't, have you?
Nope.
All right, so nobody gets a point.
Not an intentional ride along.
I was going to say, I've ridden along with them, but.
It wasn't pre-planned, let's say that.
Write a love letter.
Yeah. Everybody has.
Everybody has.
You didn't respond.
Not yet. Be patient. Steve has, you have, I have. Kevin, you have written a love letter.
Yeah, of course.
Sure.
I was
just got married.
Kevin's life is a love letter.
Yeah.
Go to an estate sale.
Yes. God, yes.
I've done that. Steve, you've done that?
Yes, but this is a weird list.
Why?
Well, I mean, where did... that come from?
Well, it's just one of those things they recommend that if you want to experience all that life has to offer, here's one of those things. So yes, yes, yes. And then Kevin?
I haven't, but I really want to.
You should go to an estate sale.
I ran into Judy Bart Topinka at one.
Did you?
We fought over a beaver coat. Is that a beaver? Yes, it is. Are you going to get it? Because I'd like to get it.
What's next on your list, Bill?
This is weird. I've had a dream that just like that, that you and Judy Bart Topinka were fighting over a beaver coat.
I didn't identify myself either because I didn't have makeup on. And she looked so pretty.
Yeah.
God rest her
Striking
soul.
Striking lady.
Thank you so much, Bill.
You're welcome so much, Judy Bart Topinka. Check your credit report.
Yes.
Yep. I have. Steve?
Yeah.
Yep. Kevin?
Oh, yeah.
Yep, we all have. Boy, some of these are tailor-made for you, Wendy. Organize your closet.
I've done that.
Yeah?
And got it disorganized and organized again. Yes, definitely.
All right.
Put up a shelving unit.
Yep. All right. I have, certainly. Steve, you have. Everyone has. Kevin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stupid. These are getting dumber.
Yeah, some of these, I think maybe they're stretching them to get to 50 because some of these are easy. This one is
have
another.
Have you chewed a piece of gum?
Never. I've heard stories, but I've never actually chewed one. Make a budget. Everyone's made a budget at some point.
Whether you stick to it or not, that's the question.
Right. Learn how to make a meal using just whatever's in your refrigerator.
Do that frequently.
Every day. Yeah. Go to a state fair.
Yep.
Yep. Kevin, you have?
Which one are we on here? The state fair?
The state fair.
Yes.
Yeah? Kane County. No, that's a flea market. I don't think I've been to a state fair.
I've been to the Florida State Fair. That counts.
No, I haven't been, actually.
Did they have a giant alligator made out of butter?
I think they did. Why?
Because most state fairs have
they're always
a giant...
just something made out of butter.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had, they had an alligator made out of butter.
Illinois, you'd have a cow made out of butter.
Right. In Milwaukee, you'd have a giant, like Wisconsin, you'd have a giant stick of butter made out of butter. Not as exciting. See a show on Broadway.
Yeah. No.
Oh.
Chicago Broadway, but
no,
not
they
New
want
York.
Real, they say nope. The Great White Way.
Have not done it.
Steve is no longer answering. I saw Lion King. I saw a couple shows on Broadway. I've seen a few.
I've only been to New York for several hours.
I've never been to New York.
Kevin?
Nope.
Never?
Nope.
Start on a show on Broadway.
Someday.
I made that one up. Do community theater.
I would love to.
What would
I'm
you
too
be in?
Old.
What play would you be in?
Old Calcutta. I don't know. Whatever they were offering.
You know that in Old Calcutta, the cast wears no clothing.
No.
It's true.
Boy, I picked a good one.
You have to be
I'm
in it
blushing,
now. You
actually.
Said you have to be
no.
in it.
I know, because no one's doing it.
Well, if they do a revival of it, you just signed yourself up.
Seriously?
To play the role of Nora in Old Calcutta. Good luck to you.
I am blushing for the first time. I made myself
you didn't know that?
No.
In Old Calcutta, no, there's no costumes. It's just you being naked on the show. That's it.
You're a liar.
No, look it up. Look it on the internet. It's on there. No Calcutta. No clothes.
No Calcutta.
No Calcutta in Old Calcutta. All right. Can we tabulate the winner and announce that next? We'll tell you who won from Reader's Digest.
It's not
things,
nude.
The things you... Oh, Calcutta is? All the things you should have already done by the age of 50. How did you hold up? We'll get to that next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.